Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA show!
Back in your life on this Monday, September 16th, 2019. Hello again, everyone. How are you? It's good to be here. Hope you're doing well. I'm Ariel Helwani, and there's a lot to discuss on this Monday afternoon. We are buzzing because there is so much, as always, going on in the world of mixed martial arts. Of course, the big news on Saturday, Justin Gaethje defeats Donald Cerrone in the first round. That's now three straight first-round finishes. For the man they call the highlight, he is a different kind of fighter. Long gone is that reckless Justin Gaethje. Long gone is that Justin Gaethje who absorbs a bunch of strikes, the most amount of strikes for a while in UFC history. Long gone is that guy. Now we've got a calm, cool, and collected Justin Gaethje. Now we've got a Justin Gaethje who goes in there, not trying to like use his head as a punching bag, but no, actually goes in there measured, patient, and is finishing guys in the first round. Three in a row now in the first round. James Vick, Barbosa, now Cerrone. And so the big question is, who is next for Justin Gaethje? He brushed aside the idea of fighting Conor McGregor. I think that was a mistake on his part. He talked about Khabib, Tony Winner. No. And I know Justin Gaethje likes to take time between his fights. Like, he's not one of those guys who's going to fight in 3 weeks. I know that. But the Gaethje-McGregor fight is the one to make, in my opinion, for both guys. That's the perfect fight for both guys. Just like I said last week, Khabib Ferguson was the fight to make unequivocally. Well, now I say Gaethje McGregor is the fight to win. Excuse me, the fight to make unequivocally. And late Sunday, Conor tweeted Dublin December 14th. And this has made everyone go nuts. What's he talking about? Oh, some people are rolling their eyes, as is the case these days. But a lot of people are wondering, what is he talking about? The UFC has an event on December 14th. In Las Vegas. As of right now, there is no event booked in Dublin on December 14th, and I don't expect one to be booked. Now, crazy things have happened in the sport, but I don't expect one to be booked right now for December 14th. What he is trying to say with that tweet is, I want to give back to the people. I want to fight for my people. I want to fight for my countrymates. I want to make good. It has not been a good year and a half for us. And I want to return on December 14th. I think that was the biggest part. Like, he is ready to come back, just like he told me last month. He is ready to come back. Tweeted out that photo after the Gaethje fight. Seems like he is ready. That was kind of a reply. It's become somewhat of a thing that he does after all the main events these days. He tweets something out. I think he really wants that Frankie Edgar fight. I don't think he was BSing when he said that. I think he views that as an opportunity to get ready for Khabib. Similar style matchup, but I don't know if there's much there, to be honest. Frankie's moving down to 135. He's going to fight him at 155. It just doesn't seem like a fight that will interest that many people. Now, Conor versus a broomstick does well, but to me, Gaethje versus McGregor is the fight to make. So we'll see if they get it done, and we'll see if they get it done sooner rather than later. That's the fight that I'd love to see happen. Glover Teixeira defeated Nikita Krylov via split decision. Bizarre ending to the Todd Duffy, Jeff Hughes fight. No contest. Very reminiscent, by the way, of the Czech Congo, Ryan Bader fight. Uriah Hall defeated Antonio Carlos Jr. Misha Cirkunov with a Peruvian necktie, or should I say a Latvian necktie, just the second in UFC history behind CB Dolloway and Jesse Taylor back in the day, 2008, I believe, off the top of my head. So a lot happened, but there was one big story that happened. To me, the biggest story of them all, and I will get to that in a second. First, let me run down today's lineup, and then we'll get to our first guest of the day, who I think stole the show in Vancouver and was a bigger deal than Justin Gaethje and his win over Donald Cowboy Cerrone. Luke Rockhold will join us at 3:45. He has not talked since his loss to Jan Błachowicz. Hopefully I said that right. We'll talk to Luke Rockhold at 3:45. He'll join us to talk about his future, where he goes from here. Is he really done? Did he really break his jaw? All that stuff and more will be addressed with Mr. Rockhold at 3:45. Jeremy Stevens is back this Saturday, headlining the UFC's return to Mexico City against Yair El Pantera Rodriguez. We'll talk to Jeremy, who's been in Mexico for the last 2 weeks, by the way, or maybe it's 3 weeks now. Anyway, always good to talk to Jeremy Stevens. That's a big fight at 145. We'll talk to him at 325. How about the return of Bam Bam Baklava himself? Bronsolino, Action Bronson, back by popular demand. I think I'm going to have him on every week. I love talking to this guy. He's amazing. He's got hot takes. We'll talk to him at 3:05. Kat Zingano will join us at 2:45, her first interview since she was released from the UFC. She's got a lot going on in her life, so we'll talk to her about that. 2:25, we'll talk to Todd Duffy, get his take on what happened with the eye poke and the criticism afterwards, how he's feeling. 2:05, we'll talk to Dustin Poirier, his first interview since leaving Abu Dhabi. How is he feeling? He's been active on social media. Where does he go from here? Ben Askren will join us in, I believe, his 10th appearance on the Helwani Show since we moved over to ESPN. That, according to our stats guru, Andrew Davis. Get his thoughts on the state of the welterweight division, which is still a mess. We'll get into all that. And Ally Quintal will join us at 1:25 to talk about his fight against Dan Hooker, UFC 243 Melbourne, Australia, October 5th. But first, like I said, the biggest story of the weekend, it wasn't Justin Gaethje. It wasn't the return of Todd Duffy. In fact, this time last week, I was talking to you about this card, and I said Michelle Pajeda, that everyone was all excited about, that everyone thought was the bee's knees. He didn't have an opponent. This time last week, Michelle Pajeda was opponentless. A week later, Tristan Connolly is the one everyone is excited about. That man, the pride of Victoria, British Columbia, Boondock, takes this fight on 5 days' notice. The lone Canadian-born fighter who walked into Rogers' place on Saturday and won. Look at him. Tristan Connolly, all this time, I have been searching for the next Canadian star. Well, we have found him. Tristan Connolly, on behalf of Canada, we would like to say congratulations and welcome to the program. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. Ariel, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Wow, what a story this is, Tristan. A week ago right now, 1 p.m. Eastern time on Monday, what were you doing? Were you even signed yet? Like, were you signed that no one knew? Because I feel like maybe you were on the verge, but not quite signed yet.
I was waiting. I was waiting to find out if I got it. I found out Monday night, probably 9:30 at night. I mean, we knew the welterweight was out on Saturday, but I didn't have it. I knew I was in the mix. There was talks, but the UFC, from what I understand, did not really want me to come in being a lightweight against Michelle, who is a massive welterweight. They thought I was going to get killed, but me and my management, Jason House at Iridium, we believed in me. We knew we could do it. We wanted the fight, so he said it was the hardest negotiation he's ever had. He's like, usually takes him, half an hour to get guys in. 3 days. Three days. And I'm sure the fact that they were in Abu Dhabi didn't really help the situation, but I didn't find out till, 9:30. I was actually teaching a class at my gym in Vancouver, and we were all kind of waiting to see if we get the phone call. Jason calls me, and everyone goes quiet, and I pick it up. And he's like, hey, have you ever fought at welterweight before? And I'm like, no, I fought a fat guy at 180 once. And they're like, okay, I'll call you back. And then we hangs up, and 20 minutes later, I get the phone call. I just ran around the gym screaming, celebrating. Couldn't have been happier. And basically didn't sleep for the rest of the week. I slept last night. It was pretty much the first night I've slept since Saturday, since I knew a welterweight was out. Because from that point on, I was just wishing, hoping that I found out. Too excited to sleep. So I basically went into that, had to rush and get everything done, make sure everything, all my paperwork was in order, all my medicals were in order, that I was good to go. Then I had to get into the UFC hotel and make sure that I do all the stuff that they needed to be done. So it was just, nonstop, go. The rest is history.
Even as you are recounting this story right now, does it feel real? Like, does it feel like you actually have fought at the UFC? You have a win under your belt. You fought the way you did against a rising star. Like, does this still kind of feel like a dream for you?
Yes and no. I mean, I honestly feel like I deserve to be here. I honestly feel like I've been ready for a long time. I'm not surprised that I did as well as I did. I knew that was exactly how that fight was going to go. There was not a doubt in my mind. I knew how Michelle was going to come out. I knew he had all this hype behind him, but I knew that he wasn't going to put me away in the first 3 minutes. And then after that, what's next? What are you going to do when it's my fight? And, I knew if he had just taken a little more time, it might've been a different fight, but I knew after a debut like that and watching his old fights, he's had such success with jumping and knocking guys out spectacularly that I knew he was going to even more reason for me, 5 days notice, lightweight, like he's probably 30 pounds bigger than me, maybe even more, misses weight, you know, like I wasn't worried for a second. Like everyone that doesn't train with me was worried. Everyone that trains with me was like, oh yeah, you're going to kill that guy. Like wow. There was no doubt, no hesitation. I know how durable I am. I know how tough I am. I knew that, like, if you watch the fight, like the first 3 minutes, I was planning on losing the first 3 minutes. I didn't even try and hit him. The game plan was to stay on him, but don't get too aggressive because I didn't want to jump into his knee. I knew he was going to come at me with those knees, but the plan was either move out of the way or just stay tight and not move into it. Cause you know, like a car crash going 30, not a big deal, but two cars going at each other 30 is a lot harder. Right. So I just wanted to make sure that I stayed safe. And it's when you overextend yourself, it's a shot you don't see coming. If I see a shot coming, it's not going to put me away. You can hit me with a truck. If I see it coming, I'll be all right. So, I just want to let him dance around, wear himself out. If he starts getting crazy, get the fuck out of there. Which is exactly what I did when he started jumping, spinning and flipping, which people are like, oh, you find that disrespectful? I'm like, not at all. It was awesome. How many fighters can say they had someone do that to them in a fight and they made it through it? And like I said, he's exactly what I planned on happening. A few things that were a bit different were that he shot to take me down. I actually didn't think he would do that. I thought he'd see that most of my wins were all by submission and he'd probably try and stay away. But he stayed really tight. He didn't really – once we were on the ground, you could tell he didn't really want to let loose or not, because I think he knew that if he got – too uncomfortable, started hitting me too much, I would have caught him for something. Like the few little movements he did, I had some, you know, he didn't let me get too deep, but he knew I was starting to set stuff up right away. So he did a great job of just that second round of kind of holding me there. But I still think I was winning that. Even off my back, I was throwing more elbows. I was trying to set stuff up. All he was doing was holding on to me. That UFC canvas is so grippy and, you know, a big, strong guy, hard to move those hips and get that movement that you can get on the mats that, you know, we're used to.
I love the fact that you just answered like five of my questions in one question. Like you're a UFC rookie, but you're a pro when it comes to the media stuff. By the way, going back to the beginning here, did you guys volunteer your services or did they reach out to you because you're a local guy first? Like how did it actually first start you being considered for this fight?
My management, okay. You know, like I say, Jason House from Iridium, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have gotten it. They would have gone with someone else. There's other people, cause I was ranked number one in Canada at welterweight, but that's only cause I fought at 160 at FFC a few months ago. I took a fight on like 8 days notice in Vegas and, it was, you know, I was like, man, I don't think I can make lightweight. I wasn't planning on training for a fight then. So like, let's do 160. So that ranked me at welterweight and so I was ranked one at welterweight and lightweight. I knew I was the guy that deserved it. But like I said, and usually a lightweight versus a welterweight, not a big deal. It's just that the explosiveness and the size of Michelle, they're worried that I would get hurt. But, man, I wasn't.
Did you ever get close to getting signed by the UFC? Like, did you ever have talks with them, or you or your management ever have talks with them in the past, or for the longest time were they just not looking in your direction?
Well, in Edmonton, if something happened, I knew I would get a call, but – cause there were some lightweights on that card and I fought the same day, and I was training to fight. I had a 5-round war on July 27th against a guy named Dwan Owens, who got to give a shout out to him cause he's a stud, man. That was one of the hardest fights I've ever been in. I finished, put him away in the 5th round and I had him mounted and I was smashing him for a minute and he was intelligently defending. He was working. He was trying. He did not give up for a second. The ref gave him so much time and he couldn't improve his position. I got real good top control, real, real heavy hips, and he couldn't get out. And luckily I put him away. People are like, oh, are you so happy about the performance in your fight? Like, yeah, of course I am. I got $100,000. It's awesome. But I had a perfect finish rate in all my wins and I just screwed that up on Saturday night. So I'm a little bit choked about that.
What did you think when he missed weight and then at the ceremonial weigh-ins did that thing where he did the backflip and kind of messed it up, like just all the theatrics? I'm not talking about the fight itself, but just everything leading up to it. You're the guy who takes the fight on short notice. I know you usually fight at 155, but he misses weight, then the theatrics at the weigh-ins. Like, what are you thinking as you're watching all this?
Weakness. You don't make weight, you make weight. You don't not make weight. If you quit making weight, you're going to quit in the fight. That's all I thought.
Okay. And then you get to the fight itself. You see him dancing to the cage. I mean, I'm sure you knew of the guy. You knew his styles you just alluded to. But were you just thinking, all right, let me just weather this and then I'm good? Like, none of that seem to faze you at all. Like, you were even, it's crazy because you would think a guy in his debut, guy flipping in front of you, doing all the stuff, everyone's psyched about him. You'd be a little, you know, you'd be a little nervous. You would buckle under the pressure. You were just shrugging this off like it ain't no thing. It was so impressive to watch your demeanor in there.
I mean, there's always nerves with every fight. I didn't really feel that. Like, there was more excitement for this fight than any other fight. I wouldn't say I was more nervous for any other fight. A fight's a fight. There could be no one in there. There could be 20,000 people in there. I tune it all out. I knew it was going to come like that. I'm like, great. Well, you want to waste energy? Waste energy. I have no problem with that. People said, oh, is it disrespectful? Not at all. He's a professional fighter in the UFC. He's gotten to the UFC doing this, knocking dudes out spectacularly. It obviously works. If that's what works, then you're winning doing it. Why would that be anything wrong with that? Like, do what works for you. And to be honest, it made the fight that much better. Like, it takes two to tango. I was only half the fight. If he wasn't jumping, flipping, doing all that, it wouldn't be nearly as good of a story as it is. One of my corners, Dan Kajic, he said, you know, man, if this were a movie, he's like, I'd be like, get out of here. This is stupid. This is Hollywood bullshit. This would never happen. Like, all the factors that led into it. He's like, it's like Rocky. Like, you're just, there's this, it's insane. Like, I can't believe that all these things came together the way they came together, from the 5 days to the weight class up, to him being big, to him missing weight, to me being a massive underdog in my hometown, winning the fight, getting the, like, not only getting the bonus, getting his bonus. Like, it's just, there's so much. And, you know, I talked to Michelle. I had my friend he doesn't speak any English, but the Aurelio brothers are good friends. I've been doing capoeira with them. They've been doing capoeira to me. I'm not a huge jumper spinner, obviously, but I've been seeing guys jump and flip and spin, not quite to the extent as Michelle, but I'm used to that random kind of style. I'm not too worried, or I wasn't too worried. I kind of forgot the question you asked, for being honest, and kind of went on a tangent.
No problem.
You might have
Wait,
to tell me again.
Did you say that you reached out to Michelle afterwards? You spoke to her afterwards?
Yeah, I reached out. That's what I was saying. I reached out and I said, hey, man, like, thank you, obviously, because without him accepting the fight and taking the fight, I was a dangerous fight for him, too. People always say, oh, you want weight class up? It's like, yeah, but he took a fight against a guy on 5 days' notice, weight class down, and he lost. That sucks for him. Like, right. it really does. That was a huge risk because, you know, now what if what happened? It happened. So that was a risk. So I said, man, like, I knew you were going to do that. I knew you were going to come out like that. I'm not saying don't go crazy. I love your crazy. It's amazing. I'm going to be a fan forever. But start a little more fundamentally, take a little more time, then throw your crazy stuff in there, and then go back to being fundamental. One, you're going to save way more energy. You're going to recover. Two, I'm not going to be able to predict it as much, or your opponent's not going to be able to predict it as much. It's going to have a way, way higher chance of working. And I really hope he takes that and runs with it, because I want to see him. Like I say, I'm a fan. I'm out of the welterweight division now, so I want to see him go on a tear and mess everyone up.
Wow, that is great. I mean, good on you for reaching out to him and sharing that advice. How much did the crowd help? Because it really seemed like they were getting behind you. Of course, you're the local guy. Up until that point, none of the Canadian-born fighters had won. Here you come, you're Rudy. Daniel Cormier called you Rudy. How much did you feel the crowd, and how much did they help you?
You know, fight time, I'm fighting. I don't pay attention to anything. When I first started walking the hallway, I look up and see, I saw a bunch of faces I knew. I was like, I just got to tune them out. Like, I can't, if I pay attention to one, it's gonna screw me up. So I just focus, go in, tune it all out. It's almost like I have, you know, I trying to listen to my corner, couldn't hear them. That's the one thing. I couldn't hear anything because it was so loud, but it was just noise. I had a job to do, and that's all I was paying attention to.
And of course, we see you, the background there where you're doing the interview, a bunch of EA Sports stuff. Cormier mentioned as you were walking to the cage, so you actually work at EA Sports? You're like their jiu-jitsu instructor? What do you do there?
Yeah, I teach jiu-jitsu. I teach kickboxing. I do a mocap for the UFC games a lot as well. So I talked to them and I said, you know, like, I don't really want to do this from my phone and with the AirPods. They're like, oh, come in here. We'll set you up, get you on a computer here, make it look better. So that's why I have all this sweet background and these awesome headphones, and I'm not holding a phone and wiggling around like I would be otherwise.
Wait, so where are you right now?
I'm at EA Sports in Vancouver.
Wow. So you have like your own office there, or they just let you?
No, they just set me up. They hooked me up. I told they're all in here watching me. It's, you know, it's, they're all part of my team. So, you know, they're taking care of me.
And so do you help with the video games like themselves, or you just help them? Like you're just the friendly instructor that comes in and gets everyone into shape.
Well, I have two jobs. So okay. One, I teach jiu-jitsu because they have an awesome facility here. They take care of all their staff really well. They, you know, they have a outdoor soccer turf, an indoor gym, studios, fitness studios, everything. So I come in here and I teach jiu-jitsu twice a week, and I teach kickboxing once a week. And then also when they do mocap, I'm their main guy for doing mocap. So when we're shooting, like for the fight stuff, like they have different guys for theatrical stuff because I'm not an actor.
Wow.
I can't jump and spin and flip, but when it comes to punching and kicking, me and my buddies Achilles Enstrom Madura, who's also another killer that's coming up, me and him usually are the ones that come and we punch each, pretend to punch each other in the face in the suits, take each other down and do all that fun stuff. So I've been doing that for years with them. So I always like to say, when you see, like, are you in the game? I'm already in the game. You see when someone's really sloppy and looks like crap, that's me.
I mean, I would imagine, I don't know like how they do that sort of stuff, but you need to be like the update guy. Like, you know, don't they do updates? I'm really dumb when it comes to video games, but can't you like download fighters? You need to be in the game today, right? Like they need to get on this right now, right?
I'll tell them that in a sec.
I mean, come on.
I don't know the process, but I think for adding a character, they're just adding moves that character has done, and then they're just adding, they're taking a picture of their face and putting it over. They're probably looking at me like, I don't know if I said that right, but that's what I mean.
How'd you get that gig, by the way?
My old coach was the instructor and the stunt coordinator for, and did all a consultant, if you will, the MMA consultant.
Okay.
So years ago I started coming in, and he's actually kind of moved out of the position of teaching and I was taking over for him. So that's how I got the first gig. And then of course they need someone. Well, I live here. I'm a professional fighter. They know me. I'm the go-to guy. So I've been coming in doing, working on that with them for a long time. And it's funny. They don't really bring consultants in anymore because they have to have a stunt coordinator. Stunt coordinator in the last, what, 5-6 shoots hasn't done a single thing. Like I think they have to have it there for, legal purposes, but they don't ask. They ask me when it comes to, hey, what would you do to fight here? They ask me in Achilles, like, and plus we got brown, purple, blue belts here now. It's been going on for a long time. Like we got some real good guys in the jiu-jitsu program here, and they've been making the game for a while now. So we're all just spitballing ideas off each other. Like, hey, you know, like this, you know, we could do this from here. Like, what would you do from here? Would you do this? It's like, well, because there's a balance. Sometimes it's, what would you do? And well, what's going to work in the game, right? Like, it's not always the same thing. It's like, yeah, you would do that, but we can't make that work in the game. And a lot of the times you'd be like, yeah, you never do that. But the player has the choice to do that. So you have to do the wrong thing. And because if they click that button, they have to be able to do it, right?
So you mentioned that you got the $100,000 bonus because you guys got fight of the night. Your 50K, you get his 50K because he missed weight. You also get 20% of his purse. You got your show and win. How do you feel about getting his portion? Like it, at the end of the day, he did fight and he was in there. And as you said, it takes two to tango. Do you think that is fair because he missed weight that you get the whole pot?
Yes and no. Obviously, I feel bad for him. I feel like, man, you fucked up. Like, make weight. It's why you make weight. I do feel bad for him. Well, it's not like I'm going to turn down the extra $50,000. I still have to pay my management their cut. I hope what it is he learns a real good lesson from this. I know he actually had a hard week. He had a bunch of his corners, visas got turned down. He had no one helping him all week. He ended up getting people in at the end of the week, but he had no one helping him cut weight. You know, he's a young guy. He was fighting at 185 mostly from what I've seen before the UFC. So he might not have had these big drastic cuts. And at his age, no one to help him. It was a hard week for him. And my heart goes out to the guy. Like I couldn't have been a nicer guy. Came up to me like he came up to me the first time, and I didn't even know if he knew who I recognized me because he was so nice. He doesn't speak English. He came up to me with his phone. I was sitting doing like USADA stuff, this little course I had to do. I was the only one there, and he walks up to me with his phone. Excuse me. Gives me his phone. He's, do you know where the food is? And I was like, oh, the fridge. Oh, thank you. You know, he goes, thanks. And then the next day we're at weigh-ins. They line us all, or the fake weigh-ins, or the ceremonial weigh-ins, I should say. Yes. I'm sorry. We're all waiting there. And so we're just talking to the translator. He's telling me, you know, thank you for taking the fight. I'm so sorry. I missed weight. It's been a really hard week for me with everything. And I was like, man, like, No, thank you. You accepted the fight against me. This is a dream come true. Like, I've been busting my ass for years, and you're giving me an opportunity to shine. And I mean, I'm gonna. But you know, I feel a little bit bad for having to kick your ass tomorrow. But it's all business. Most of the guys I fight end up being real good friends with. Like, 90% of fighters are wicked guys before and after. We're all chasing the same dream. We're all on the same journey. You know, just like in life, 10% of people are assholes. Most of the people are nice. So that's generally how it is for most people I fight. 90% of the people I fought, I've become real good friends with. 10% don't really care for, and that's kind of how it goes.
Speaking of that long journey, after your fight, I don't know if you saw this, but Frank Mir posted something on Instagram, which was pretty amazing. Apparently, you met each other way back in the day. This photo was taken 9 years ago, and it was at an event in Victoria, AFC. At the time you just lost, he was there to corner his friend Robert Drysdale. You were 1-2 at the time. You went up to him, and now here he is remembering this photo somehow and posting it after your victory. Do you remember? I mean, I would imagine you remember this. Who was that guy? Who was Tristan Connolly back then? And is it kind of surreal now to see Frank Mir? Like, you went up to Frank Mir for the photo. Now he's honoring you after your UFC debut 9 years later. What a crazy turn of events.
Yeah, man, it's obviously it's awesome. Like, that night, that was the only night I've ever really gotten my ass kicked. Like, I fought a guy named Dan Ring, and he's bettered me, outclassed me, beat me up everywhere. Went 3 rounds. I fought my heart out, but I had moments, but he beat me up. And Frank was there. He's in my dressing room. We didn't talk the whole time. I walk out of the fight. Just got stitches. Like, I had to hold my lip open and let the doctor stitch me. He's like, it's only a couple. We're not going to put any freezing in. So he's sticking the needle in my lip. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right, I guess I'll ask Frank Mir for a picture now. And he was like, yeah, of course. And didn't really talk after. And I actually got to see Frank at FFC when I fought. I took, like I said, I took that fight on 8 days notice in FFC a few months back. And Frank was the commentator for that. And he told me, hey, Frank, you know, like, years ago, this is – you're at AFC, and I got a picture with you here. And after the fight, he gave me a shout out. So I said, hey, like, I know, I just want to say, remember this was the, so I sent him the picture being like, hey, this was that picture of us all those years ago I was telling you about last couple months. And, then I see he read it, didn't do anything. And an hour later, I see this post and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe Frank Mir just gave me this shout out. That's amazing. Huh. So, and it's just the journey, man. Like, I was 29 years old, 5-5. I had no amateur fights. I was a blue belt in jiu-jitsu. I probably shouldn't have taken a pro fight, but there wasn't really much amateur stuff going on back then around where I was at. So, I went 1-1. I didn't really know what I was doing. Said fights. I said yes to everyone. Took every fight I could. My second fight after won my first one. I went to Japan. I fought a guy with 30 fights. I had a minute and a half of cage time. Took him to decision. It was pride rules, soccer kicks, head stomps. I soccer kicked him in the face, split him wide open. But, he got the decision on me. And I just kept going. And the only reason I kept fighting is because I love fighting. And I knew I don't care about the money. I just want to keep kicking ass and keep getting better. And, you know, I've been coaching a lot more and more and more and fighting. And I was like, you know, I never thought I was going to make it to the UFC. I thought I was just going to keep fighting because I love doing it until I can't do it anymore. And then I'm just going to become a coach because it's the only thing I want to do in life. I don't want to be involved in anything other than MMA. It's my passion. And I'm in it till the end.
Is Tristan Connolly the new face of Canadian MMA? Like I said, we've been looking for someone. I feel like you're that guy. You're quintessentially Canadian. Why not you? Do you assume the throne?
Hey. I'll take it. You know, I got no problem with that role. I feel like I'm ready. I feel like I have the skills. I have the training partners. I have everything I need. Like, we're really doing something special up here. My gym checked my Vancouver, but it's not just, it's all the best gyms in the lower mainland. Like, so my gym's checked my Vancouver. My buddy Dan, who's my corner, has a gym called Universal in North Van, Unreal. Roll Jiu-Jitsu is another wicked gym in North Van that I go to. Our partners with Sound in Squamish, that's where Cole Smith's main gym is. They're Checkmat Squamish. They're basically our partner gym, Revolution and Langley. I train with everyone here at EA. Like, I have awesome people wherever I go. Also Scorpion MMA and Pitt Meadows been working with Dan Golker. He's been helping a lot with my striking. I got a lot to work on. There's this is a never ending journey, and I'm always improving, always getting better. I'm never gonna be where I want to be, so I'm going to have to keep working until I die.
When do you want to return?
I'm hearing You're in December 14th. Sounds like a pretty good card.
Okay.
So I wouldn't mind that in Vegas. I mean, I could fight even sooner, but really potentially I feel I didn't take much damage in the fight. I feel pretty good. You know, all the bumps and bruises, I'm sore, a little sore, but other than that, I think give me a few days, we should be pretty good to go. I'm gonna go back and lift some weights and do some light stuff tonight. I get right back into the mix, keep my diet on point. You know, I went out, had some pizza and a few beers, got absolutely mauled by people. I'm like, hey, let's go back to the hotel. And I tried to sleep, couldn't sleep, never sleep after a fight. So last night was really the first good night's sleep I've had in a week.
Wow. And just to be clear, you're going to fight at 155, correct?
Oh, God, yeah. Michelle was the perfect opponent for me to fight at 170, which everyone thinks is insane. I'm like, man, if it was just a boxer, wrestler at 170, the size would have been a lot harder for me to deal with. I don't know that I would have been able to tire him out in the same way. Because I knew that the way to win this fight was to tire him out. I'm not going to fight everyone like that. Like, what if someone else is crazy cardio? That would be a dumb way to fight him, right? Like, it's... I'm leaving openings. I was loose. I just that was the way to beat the opponent. It was the game plan. I followed the game plan. Like, the game plan to begin with in the first round was be on him, but not too far in. I don't want to pressure too far hard and run into that knee, but I don't want to give him space to recover. I want to make him keep hitting me. Like, I know when he hit, like, as long as I'm in the pocket, kind of like just outside the pocket, but not quite in kicking range. That's where I want it to be. He starts getting all crazy. Just get the fuck out of Dodge, you know, be out of the way, get back in on him, and just make him work. After that backflip, when I got back up, he was all mine. Like, that was his time. His time to win. It was that first 3 minutes. He didn't. Then it became Tristan time, and I went to work, and I knew there was no steps backwards. There was no stopping. Don't worry about hitting him hard. Like, I wasn't even worried about hitting him hard. I was just fainting, moving, nonstop movement, nonstop getting him stuff to think about. Like, my hands weren't great in the right position, but I landed some hard shots on him, hard shots that I saw wobble his eye. Like, I think I caught him with, like, a hook or an uppercut in the clinch, and I was actually – he fell over kind of after because I was holding him up, and I threw him, and he fell down to the side, and that's when he started shooting on me. You know your striking's working when you make a striker shoot on a grappler, so – I mean, it kind of threw me a little bit. I wasn't expecting him to shoot, but just means that my hands are starting to – I've got some good power in them.
Congratulations, man. What a wonderful story. I love stories like this, and great to see a Canadian do well on the Canadian stage, and especially coming out of nowhere against someone with that much hype. I mean, it was just amazing to watch. So enjoy this moment. Enjoy the victory. Enjoy everything that comes with it. Welcome to the UFC, and we're very excited to see where you go from here. Well done, my man. Thanks for doing this.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me on. Everyone's blown away. They're all people that I've looked up to are messaging me like, "You're on Ariel Helwani. That's crazy." And I'm like, "Well, I said I feel like I deserve to be here. It's nice to finally get a recognition for all the hard work I put in."
Yep, you certainly do. And by the way, the people demanded. It's been a while since I've had like a unanimous sort of credo from the people to have a guest on. They all wanted you on, so I'm hope they're very happy that you were able to share your story here on the show today. Thanks so much, Tristan. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Ariel.
All right, there he is, Tristan Connolly. What a great story. The Tristan Connolly era has begun. And everyone's still buzzing over what that man did against Michelle Pajeda Saturday in Vancouver. All right, let's turn our attention to UFC 243. It happens less than 2 weeks from now in Melbourne, Australia. One of the big fights on the card involves Dan Hooker versus this man, Raging Al, back in his familiar spot. There he is. How are you, Al? Long time.
It's been a while, right? It's been a while. I thought you forgot about me or something.
Never.
I don't know. Never. No, I'm just playing. But I'm looking forward to UFC 243 in Australia. I've been training hard. I'm leaving on Saturday. So I appreciate you getting me on the show before I leave.
Yes.
Time difference, but I had to have been waking up early to come on. Not that I wouldn't have done it, of course, for the
I know.
Show. But
I know. I appreciate it.
It's great to how things work out.
I appreciate it. This is a big fight, and what's interesting about it is Dan Hooker looked really good in his last fight, and he's somewhat of a rising star. And afterwards, he said, "I want anyone on that card. I just want to fight with my good pal Israel Adesanya." And within seconds, you were the guy who said, "Yeah, me. I want to go to Australia. I want to fight in front of 50,000 or so people. I want to fight the local-ish guy. I know he's from New Zealand, but that's a lot closer than Long Island." Why were you so intrigued by this fight? Why did you want it?
Well, first, No, he said my name somewhere.
Did he?
Said my name.
Beforehand?
Yeah. What's that?
Beforehand he said it? Before the interview in the cage?
No. After the interview, I think it was the interview in the back, like right after they go to the back and the interview.
Okay.
I wouldn't just like, that's more like me calling him out. So I don't think that's how it went down. I'm pretty sure he said my name. And then I looked on Twitter and someone had tagged me in something. And I was like, all right. He said he wanted to fight me in Australia. And I don't think he really thought I was going to just say yes like that. And I just, you want to fight me in Australia? I'll give you exactly what you want. I pulled me out. I said, yes, that's it. The UFC kind of thought I was joking too. I was the one that presented them with the fight. And then for a while they thought I was kidding, but I was pretty serious. So I don't know. Dan Hooker kept saying that I wasn't accepting the fight. Meanwhile, there was no fight to accept. I was the one that offered them the fight. So, that's how that went down. But Australia is nice. I love the Australian people. They were great people to fight in front of. And I fought there back, I don't know, what, 3 or 4 years ago in Sydney. I fought Ross Pearson over there, who was kind of like an adopted Australian, So I had a great time over there. Went over there early, got acclimated. The people over there are great. The fans are great. I went back the year after that. I didn't really have much going on. The UFC was, we were kind of whatever. So I set up some seminars over there, and I taught seminars at like 5 gyms in Australia. So I'm pretty Australian for an American.
Okay.
And I think that it would be interesting to see how the crowd is, how the crowd reacts to us. I'm sure the New Zealanders will be coming over in flocks to see this one. But I think me and the Australians are pretty cool.
Oh, you think that you're gonna be cheered more than he is because the New Zealanders are gonna be like the enemies on that card because it's Whitaker versus Adesanya. You're the fan favorite in this fight, contrary to popular belief.
I'm not. Really, only thing I'm thinking about is the fight, but I do know the people. I do know the people over there. I've gotten a lot of messages and I've gotten a lot of support, and I've been over there twice. I think that I respect the Australians, and they work hard, they play hard. So I think we have a lot, and we're very similar in a lot of ways. And I think they respect that. They like the way I fight. I like the way they do things.
By the way, why do you think the UFC thought you were joking about this fight?
I think they wanted this. I don't know. The MSG is like a month.
Yeah.
After,
yeah.
I think they wanted to see if I wanted this fight to be in MSG. What am I going to say? Oh, yes, I accept your fight call out, but let's do it here. I just said, yes, you want to fight me in Australia? Yes, that's it. You're going to get exactly what you asked for. And that's it. I'm not going to say, oh, yes, but let's do it here at this weight or this time. He called me out and I gave him everything he wished for and more. So that's it.
Are you impressed by him? That wasn't a very convincing yes.
I'm impressed by him because he was in our locker room at one of the fights, and I remember looking at him and I was like, this guy's in the UFC. He's like warming up. And I thought he was a 170 pounder or whatever. I think Marab and Aljo fought in Newark. It was in New Jersey, and we were in the same locker room. And I was like, this guy fights in the UFC? Like, he doesn't look great. And then since then, he's looked really good. So he's very dangerous. He's climbing up the ranks. He's making a lot of noise. So he's definitely working hard. I can tell he's working hard, and he's going to be coming after me. He's hungry. He's young up and comer, and he's fighting on a huge stage close to home. He's comfortable in that side on that side of the world. And he picked me out of everybody. He picked me out. So he's hungry. He's coming after me, and I'm gonna make him wish he didn't say my name.
By the way, this is the first time we see you in action since May, since your fight against Donald Cerrone. What, if anything, did you learn from that fight?
I think I learned a lot from that fight. I think I learned a lot. It really refocused me. I think things were going pretty good for me. It was a little controversy in my life. I got to come back from something. I got a little chip on my shoulder right now. I got to show people that I'm not just a tough guy. I think people, you think of me, you think of tough. I'm way better than I am tough. I think in my last couple of fights, maybe I've had to show the toughness, but I think in this fight, the toughness will cancel itself out, and you're really going to see who the better fighter is. And I've been working all my life for this. You know, I'm refocused, not even refocused, just more focused, more everything. I fought a tough veteran, Donald Cerrone. He's been in there with everybody, and he's good. You know, I mean, shame what happened to him this weekend, but it's a learning. I think a couple of years from now, we're gonna look back, and that'll be the fight where it's like that fight really propelled me to do what I'm about to do.
Wow. By the way, were you surprised that Gaethje finished him so quickly? I know you and Gaethje have, you know, you've had your history. You never fought, but there was some talks. Were you surprised that he beat him that quickly?
No, I don't know if I was surprised. I thought that was definitely a possibility. I thought that, Cerrone, he fights so frequently. That catches up with you. And he's not getting any younger. I thought that might play a factor in my fight, and it didn't really look like it. It didn't feel like it did for sure. And then I thought he was fighting very soon after his last fight and two fights to me.
Yeah.
And now he fights two more fights. So I think, it's got to catch up to you at some point. Gaethje's a fast starter. He comes out quick and he's been knocking people out. So I think that if it was going to go one of maybe two or three ways, that was probably one of the top ways that it was going to go, you know?
Yeah. And by the way, you know, speaking of fights that have happened recently, 2 weekends ago was the Khabib fight. I know you're probably not rooting for one guy or the other, but like, do you just root? I feel like you root for him to finish guys so that you could say like, I went the distance. Like that's even though you didn't win the fight, and you know, some might say that he says it's one-sided, you went the distance on 24 hours notice. So I feel like that's a small feather in your cap. Do you actually think about that as you're watching these fights? Like, all right, I just want him to finish it early so I could say that I went the distance with him on 24 hours notice.
I think I just want him to keep winning. You know, keep doing what he's doing. He basically tells you exactly what he's going to do to everybody, and that's what he does. So, I'm happy that he keeps winning. And my goal is to get it. I want to win that. This is the first step to getting back towards that title shot. This fight against Dan Hooker in Australia, this is step one. And no matter who it is that has the belt when I get to it, I'm gonna win that belt, and I hope that it's gonna be Khabib that's still the champion when I get to it, because I really need to run that one back for myself. I think that I have what it takes, and I know I'm gonna get trashed online for even saying this because I have before, but I really believe that with even 6 weeks preparation, a five-round fight is something I never did up until that. I'm not even going to talk about it, but that's the fight I want. That's eventually, I hope that happens again and I get to prepare for it. That's all I'll say. But I'm confident in my skills. I'm confident in what I can do. And look, you're only as good as your last fight. So right now people think I'm just a tough guy. And I'm working very, 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 very hard to show you all the other things that I'm good at.
It seems like, you know, you're fairly active. You're getting right back in there. Things are going well, right? Like there's not a lot of turmoil. There's not a lot of problems. I feel like we're on a nice little run here.
Uh, can change like that, Ariel.
It can. But for right now, it seems like it's a good spot, right? Or am I wrong?
I don't know where we're at.
What's bothering you?
Nothing's bothering me. I don't know.
Tell us. It's okay. Only good things have come when you've shared your feelings on this program.
I know. Does anybody watch?
No, no one watches. Please.
No, not the show. I know everyone's watching. That's why.
Oh.
That's why. I know everyone's watching this show.
Tell me, what are you going to say? Does anyone watch what?
I don't know. What was the Bellator card this weekend?
This coming weekend?
The last weekend.
There wasn't a
belt. I'm confused. I like watching Bellator, but I just can't. I don't have that. I just got the DAZN app.
Oh, okay. What are you trying to say, Al?
I don't know. I'm just trying to think. I'm trying to think, Ariel.
Okay.
I'm just asking questions.
Oh, you're asking me questions? There wasn't a Bellator card this past weekend. There was one a couple weeks. Yeah, 2 weekends ago.
Yeah.
What about it?
Did you watch it?
Yeah, I did. They had it was okay, I guess. I mean, featherweight Grand Prix.
Yeah.
But that's featherweight. You're lightweight.
I don't know. I haven't seen it too much.
Okay. Interesting. What about Kevin Lee coming after me a couple weekends ago? Or weeks ago, a couple Mondays ago, right? He was saying that I bring you up too much. Did you see this video of him driving his car and playing a video game?
Kevin Lee's never been the smartest of them all.
Did you see this video? I don't know if you follow him on Instagram. It's very scary.
I don't follow him on Instagram. I don't have that kind of time. But hopefully he's a good driver because he ain't too smart. And if he's playing a video game while he's driving, hopefully he's a good driver. But, yeah, I did see the interview where he came after you and he brought up my name. I don't know, man. That guy's shot. He's talking about look, it's just like you can tell that he's never going to be good because of his little attitude, the way he sees things. Like, no one gives a shit about him coming down to lightweight. He's like, you know what? Khabib impressed me this weekend. I'm going to come down to lightweight, and I think I can help out George St. Pierre in case they fight. Like, bro, shut the fuck up. No one even cares. Like, is that guy kidding? That guy's nuts. And I never would have brought him up if you didn't bring him up right now. But holy shit, that guy's fucking shot. I don't know. He just needs like a brain transplant. That's the only way he'll become a good fighter. Because he's just not. There's no reason why Kevin Lee isn't a world champion. There's no reason at all except for right here. That's the only thing that's holding him back. And he just won't. He just doesn't learn his lesson. He just keeps doing the same thing again and again and again. So that's like, I don't know.
And of course, New York Rick letting me know that it was a Tesla, so he wasn't really driving. Get the hell out of here with this. You're on the road. There's cars in front of you. Enough. Like, it's like one of those self-driving cars. I mean, you have to be some kind of, I mean, really, you don't believe in this nonsense, do you?
I don't know. The Tesla seems pretty good.
Oh,
me
stop
and
it.
Aljo was talking about this Tesla.
No. It's very dangerous.
Well, yeah. No, there's no excuse for driving and playing a video game at the same time. But I'm all with the electric cars.
So. Yeah, sure. But just drive it yourself. That's, on the highway. There's a lot going on. You're defending Kevin Lee now.
I'm not defending that guy. I don't know. I didn't even know about him doing it. I'm getting secondhand information, so I can't make a good educated decision about what he does and what he doesn't do. But the Tesla seems pretty cool, man. I think one day, that's
the future. Yeah,
it's the future. You know what I mean? And I don't know. Maybe you can play a video game and drive it, and drive it, and you're safe. I don't know. You're like half there, half not there, half in the video game.
No.
The car can do half the work, and you're doing half the work. You put it together, and it looks like you're doing, you know, the right amount of work, right?
By the way, speaking of the future, are you really training Bagel Boss to fight Lenny Dykstra? Is this the truth?
I got him started in his training camp, and I've been in touch with his people, and apparently he's doing what he's doing, and he's gonna fight. So I'm really looking forward to it. I think I taught him a tremendous amount in the time that we worked together. I think that anyone Lenny Dykstrom's working with, is not as qualified a trainer as myself and Chris Weidman. So the Bagel Boss, I got his back. He's a Long Island guy. So listen, he's been through some shit, and we all have. But I think we need a little more compassion, you know?
Okay.
In the world. We got to help out the guys like the Bagel Boy. So that's what I did. I brought him down to the gym. He was a little, like shy when he came in. It's pretty intimidating. You come into a gym like that and, you know, you're walking right in there with me and Weidman and, the rest of the pros that were there. But we kind of got him comfortable, taught him some stuff, and he opened up and he really was entertaining. It was hysterical. Just, he's a character, man, for sure. And I'm happy that, you know, as long as he's happy with all the publicity and everything that's going on, I'm happy for him. But I think that, he's kind of gone under the radar his whole life, and people are giving him some attention, and he's an entertaining character. He's a good guy. After the workout, he was like, he said to us, he was like, oh, you know, you guys, did you guys have a good time? You know, did I make you laugh? Like, it was a good thing. It was, I hope that he learned something and he walked away. I'm sure he left that gym with a new outlook on things. And it doesn't mean that he's not going to get a little crazy here and there, because I think that's a lifetime of shit that he's kind of had to deal with. So, I don't know. I wish the best for him. Long Island guys, we stick together. So I got his back, and I think he's gonna win. Lenny, I saw a video of him training, and he looks like absolute garbage. So I think that the Bagel Boss is gonna put it on him.
All right, UFC 243, Melbourne, Australia. Ally Quinta, Dan Hooker, the people's main event behind Whitaker Adesanya. Do you want to say that thing before you go? What was on your mind? Last chance.
What thing was on my mind?
I don't know. You wanted to say something, and you kind of bit your tongue.
I'm just getting started, Aaron.
All right.
I'm just getting started in this whole thing.
Okay.
So the people better recognize.
All right.
I was out for a long time. I had a lot of – there was a lot of things that I was fighting besides people in the cage. And all I want to do is fight people in the cage. So
okay.
Everybody better make it worth it for me to fight people in the cage.
Yes.
And put in the time that I need to do. I'm not doing this shit half-assed no more. I can't
yes.
be selling houses and fighting the top guys in the world. So it's got to be worth it for me or I'm fucking out.
No, don't do it. Don't do it. Oh, no. Oh, no. I hope he didn't break his computer again. I was worried about that. Ally Quinta, everyone. All right, let's not make our next guest wait any longer. We'll go from Ally Quinta to Ben Askren, one of the all-time great back-to-back guest bookings in the history of this show. Funky, are you there, making your record 10th appearance on the program?
I was listening to you and Ally Quinta, and Errol, I'm very disappointed in your lack of desire to want to drive an electric car. It is significantly better than you. It does not get distracted like you get distracted. What's the issue?
Are you serious right now? You feel comfortable with people playing video games?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, dude, I get distracted. I'm a human being. I have flaws. You are a human being. You have flaws. And I'm not going to say that the Tesla is going to be perfect in autopilot, but it is probably going to be much better than human beings. There's a lot of auto deaths every year. Not a good thing.
You're siding with Kevin Lee on this? You feel comfortable as a father?
Well, I don't know what Kevin Lee has to say about it.
Well, he posted a video of himself playing video games and looking in the back seat while his car was driving itself. I don't feel comfortable.
I don't use my auto drive feature too much because it makes you actually keep two hands on the wheel, and I'm trying to text and shit. So
no, please don't do that.
It's not illegal, you know. So whatever. Let's be honest about what we're all doing. And so it makes you keep two hands on the wheel, so I don't use it very much because then it beeps at you like you don't have two hands on the wheel, and then it says I can't use it anymore. You don't have two hands on the wheel. I'm like, okay, whatever.
What about that factoid yesterday that we dropped? 10th appearance in less than a year.
Yeah, I mean, Ariel, I don't know why. I told Jess, I don't really know why. I don't get it. For some reason, what I'm saying is resonating with the people. You know, I kind of went my whole life. I don't know about my whole life, but a good portion of my mixed martial arts career as kind of black sheep, if you will. And then all of a sudden, you know, people love me. It's funny. It's weird. Strange.
It is amazing, and especially coming off a lot. By the way, you went from 6 to 11. I didn't notice this, but it was just in the fictitious rankings. How do you feel about that?
I thought I was fifth, and I think me and Masvidal were number 4 and number 5 going into the ranking, into that fight. So, you know, the rankings don't matter all that much in the UFC, as we see. You know, sometimes they put this guy versus this guy, and they're way far apart. And we don't know if we should really trust the people who do make the rankings. So it's whatever, right? I'm 11th. I get a few wins under my belt. I'll be significantly up there. And, you know, we as we all know, it's a mix with popularity that pushes the title shots. So there's that also.
Okay, so we have a lot to discuss here.
I actually was curious why you're bringing – I was trying to think today, what did Aaron want to talk about? Because we've already talked about my Maya fight.
Yeah.
You know, I do have other things going on in my life. Nothing that I think you will be all that interested in. You know, it's wrestling and
sure.
Parenting.
Right.
Crypto and all this other, you know, kind of side stuff. But yeah, I'm excited. So just shoot away and we'll just see where we go.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this, because I feel like the 170 pound division, your weight class is a very confusing one right now, especially at the top. And I just wanted to actually sincerely know Ben Askren's take on what's going on at the very top. You've got, Kamaru Usman, the champion, Colby
These
Covington.
Guys are idiots.
Okay.
Idiots. But listen, it's not the first time I told you they're idiots and you guys should have listened to me before. I mean, holy crap. These guys, Covington and Kamaru can't get it right. I call him Kamaru. His damn name is Marty. What am I talking about here? They can't get it right. So here's listen. I don't. This is not from the UFC. This is my take on. Here's what I heard happen. Colby says, "I want a whole bunch of money." Colby, you're not worth that much money. And I'm all about fighters' rights, Errol. I do think MMA fighters as a whole should probably be paid more. But at the same time, unless you're part of that movement, you have to deal with yourself individually, one versus the UFC. And so, you know, Colby shoots it way out of the ballpark. They say, yeah, right, dude, get lost. You're not worth close to that much because he is not nearly as popular as you think. And so then they say, Colby, get lost. We're bringing George in here. And then Marty says, well, if I'm fighting George, I want more money. And they said, what? No one cares. No one gives a damn about watching you fight, Marty. Get out of here. And then they made Colby – I'm sorry, Colby. Then they made George and Nathan main event, which, you know what? People are excited about that. It's not for a title. People are pretty excited. Listen, I don't like George, but I'll give credit where credit's due. He is making people care about him. People are excited for that fight.
Okay, so we all know that, like, that was the easy one to make, but the fact that you have Kamaru and Colby, I feel like, I don't know if you view it this way, but this is my read on the situation. It almost feels like they're working together in unison, like they're I don't think they're texting behind the scenes, but it sounds like they're almost holding out together. Like, this is somewhat reminiscent of Nate. No?
That is, you know what? That's like way, way above their intelligence level. You're giving way too much.
Did we lose Ben? Okay, we seem to have. Ben, hold that thought. We lost you there for a second. You were vibing here, and the camera just went out. So let's get back to Ben here in a moment. We'll reconnect with him, talking about the welterweight title picture. As of right now, as I wrote in my weekly column for ESPN.com, they're still in the same spot as they were last week. Like, nothing's changed. I thought by now, a week later after making Masvidal versus Nate, I thought they would have, you know, moved along, and the UFC has tried to make the fight happen, but they're still talking about the same numbers, the challengers offer, all that stuff. Let's go back to Ben here, but they're still in the exact same spot. Nothing has changed. Sorry about that, Ben. I don't know what happened, but
I was texting you guys. Yeah, I saw myself the whole time and I heard you guys. And, so like we were talking about, I'm hearing an echo now. Can you hear that, Carol?
No. You hear yourself?
I do. So I'll just keep talking. It's all right.
Well, if that's frustrating, we could reconnect. I don't want you to lose your mojo.
I don't want to sound poor. So, okay, so here's the deal.
Wait a second. Do you hear yourself in your headphones? Okay. We're going to fix it. We're going to fix it.
Georgia, they're looking fantastic coming out of this. People are excited for their main event. And Colby and Marty overplayed their hand because at the end of the day, there are a few people in this business who people can care about without you fighting very frequently, but there's not a lot. There really isn't. There's only a couple. And neither one of those two has the personality to do that. And so they just lost the main event spot at Madison Square Garden, which is going to be a gigantic card. And so they just missed the opportunity for themselves. And I don't believe the UFC will reward them handsomely for this type of behavior. And the UFC always holds the cards over the head. Like if they got one over on the UFC this time, they're thinking, okay, we'll get you next time. We'll give you a little more this time. We'll get you next time. And so I think they overplayed their hands. I think they could have played their hands significantly better. A lot of people in this sport, they don't look at kind of the whole playing field. They only look at what's in front of them, and they listen to some of their dum-dums on the side telling them they're worth way more than they are.
Okay, so do you think the UFC should move on? Do you think they should go to Leon Edwards now? Like, do you think that they should actually
They're not going to Leon Edwards, Ariel.
Why not?
Because when George beats Nate in the main event, he's going to have so much steam behind him, and they're going to throw him in the main event.
Oh, you think they're going to wait?
Yeah, think about how much momentum George will have if he beats Nate Diaz.
Oh, I know, but that's November 2nd.
It would be gigantic.
They're trying to make this fight for December 14th. You can't wait until November 2nd.
There's already two title fights on December 14th.
They're going to try to stack the deck.
There's only been one show in the history of the UFC where they've had three title fights.
Incorrect.
On one card.
Incorrect, Ben. If you come on my program, you have to have the facts.
Here's the real answer.
UFC 205. Well, actually, UFC 30, maybe it was 33.
Okay, fine.
205, 217, and 214.
They all had three title fights?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
I swear. Look it up.
Okay.
Off top of my head.
Maybe that's what they're trying to do then. I thought there was only one card in the history that had three title fights.
What did you think the card was?
It was the one in Anaheim, where I caught Tyron.
So that was one, and then there was the two original MSG cards, Connor Eddie, and then GSP Bisping.
Who's the third?
Well, no, those were two separate cards. So it was Connor Eddie, Tyron versus Wonder Boy, Carolina versus Joanna. That was one card. Then the next year, it was GSP Bisping, Cody TJ, Joanna Rose.
Okay,
come on, Ben.
Wow.
Wow.
Well,
you don't get that kind of talk on your jabroni show with the other jabronis, right? Come on. Come on
that.
Now.
Well, this is why I lost your what was that contest you had?
Oh, yeah, the trivia. Yeah.
That's right. I lost the trivia night, Harold. This is why, because I don't remember all those cards of the three title fights. So, yeah, who knows? I guess maybe they'll throw the third title fight on there, but if they really want to kick them while they're down, they would just move it back. They'd probably let George have. I mean, because if you're the UFC and they're negotiating that hard, what do you want? You want another negotiating piece, and that negotiating piece will be the winner of George and Nate.
Okay, so let me ask you this. As you're watching this all unfold, is there a part of you that's like, I mean, I could have made this so much easier. I could have. This wouldn't have
been. I could have.
Does it annoy you?
We've already talked about this. I know,
but it's way worse now.
I've already forgot about it.
Okay.
I've already got it out of my life.
All right.
I've already realized that I blew that opportunity. And now I have to deal with the reality that I'm in. So, I don't really even consider that anymore.
Okay. But isn't it insane how popular Jorge Masvidal became? I never saw this coming.
I also did not see it coming. I mean, you know, he still has not said thank you. And, you know, if you think about him going into that March fight with Darren Till, barely anyone was talking about him.
I know.
He had the year. He had lost his two previous contests before that. And that's MMA. The landscape in MMA can change in a heartbeat. I mean, it really can. It can and it does very, very frequently. And since my fight, he's got a lot of great media opportunities. He's actually taking advantage of them. He's showing up to them, which is, you know, part of the job. And, yeah, so I think he's going to be – him or Nate will be a gigantic negotiating piece between Colby and Marty. They'll force the hand.
What do you think would happen if you ever actually saw him in person now? Like, do you think you guys could be cool? Do you think you would bury the hatchet? Yeah.
No, I mean, I would probably just ignore him. I don't know. He might try to attack me, so we might fight or something. I'm not sure.
Why would he attack you? You already fought.
It seems like something he'd want to do. If I ignored him and he ignored me, whatever, I'm good with that. Are we going to be friends? No, I highly doubt that it's going to be the case. So I think it's either we ignore each other or he attacks me and we fight again. One of the two.
Okay, now I want to get your opinion on this as we're running through the list.
Let's go. I'm so excited.
The UFC creating a BMF title. Buy or sell this idea?
You know who should get credit for this? Who I can't believe no one's bringing it up. And maybe I don't want to go after him like this, but maybe this means not a lot of people listen to his show. But Chael's been talking about this for a while. Chael's been talking about – not he didn't say BMF, obviously, right? But he talks about how a belt sells the fight
sure.
to your non-hardcore fan, and how they used to have this super fight. So when they couldn't come up with the title, they would put a super fight belt on the line, and people would get excited by that. And listen, I don't totally disagree. I think it is a good idea. There are some – listen, Nate versus George is going to sell better than Colby versus Marty would by a long shot. It's not even close. They're not even in the same ballpark. So F it. Throw a belt on there. If they want to do Gaethje versus McGregor and throw a belt on that, they could probably do that too. If Gaethje wants to say, well, I'm actually the BMF and I want to fight the winner and Nate and George put the title on – put the BMF title on the line, that one's going to sell good too. So I don't think it needs to be an actual title. I think Chael had a good point here.
But don't you think that like the promotion making this fake belt, like not even a tie to a weight class, is different than a super, like just this sort of BMF. Don't you think that kind of cheapens the title? Like it's one thing for Nate or Jorge to show up like Chael did with the fake belt and say,
are you really going to like consider them a world champion? Are they going to be the BMF world champion or what? I'm just going to consider
that's the thing.
That's one fun fight you want to see. They get a belt. It's like getting a trophy. You win a tournament, you get a trophy. Sweet. Awesome.
I feel like that's a line that shouldn't be crossed. Like again, it's one thing if the camp does it. But the promotion shouldn't be doing it. The belt should mean something.
What if they gave like a medal or a trophy instead of a belt? Would you be more okay with that?
Yes, because it doesn't blur the lines. Yes. A medal would be nice. A big trophy would be nice. A belt feels like a real belt. You're not a real champion. It's fun if the fighters do it between themselves. Gentlemen's agreement. It's cool. But like I said last week, Hulk Hogan took the WCW title and spray painted NWO. That made it cool. But WCW didn't make the belt. Now it makes it too corporate. It has to be counterculture. See what I'm saying?
I don't know. I'm kind of okay with it. I think it definitely works in the situation. Yeah, I mean, maybe if they were doing one on every single show, that wouldn't work. But I think once in a while, it's kind of a fun – just like I think about tournaments. I think you shouldn't do them all the time, but once in a while, tournament be fun. UFC should do a tournament once every couple of years, right? I mean, they should mix it up. I think there are certain things that make it fun.
Okay, now what's going on with you and Conor McGregor? It seems like you're poking him a lot these days.
Nothing.
What's happening? Why are you always poking?
I do on social media. I poke people.
Okay, but he finally actually responded to you. What did you make of his response? He said, "Why so serious?"
It's one of those nonsense. I think he probably spends a large portion of his day drinking, and so a lot of his responses are kind of shenanigans, nonsensical. They don't make a whole lot of sense. It was just like I was getting annoyed. And listen. People on my mentions, they think like I don't get to have an opinion because I'm a fighter or something. I get to have an opinion. I do have an opinion. My opinion is heard by a lot of people because I have a large Twitter following. And so I enjoy the sport of mixed martial arts, not only as a coach, not only as an athlete, but I enjoy watching it, following it, and doing that kind of stuff. And so I was getting annoyed by the fact that Conor just keeps saying, oh, I won't fight you. And then the Dustin fight. That's probably a great fight for him. Dustin's got a lot of hype. He just came off a world title shot. If there's a fight that's going to get Conor back in it, boom, that's it. I don't think they're going to make Khabib Conor. It's just not going to happen. Nate Diaz is tied up. So who are Conor's other options now? I mean, obviously, Justin Gaethje is. But if you're looking at Conor, shit, I'd rather fight Dustin Poirier before I'd fight Justin Gaethje. But if you're Conor.
Okay, so you're just enjoying kind of trolling him.
Sure, I get to have an opinion.
Sure.
That's it. I like MMA. If I want to have an opinion, I get to have an opinion.
Yeah.
My opinion is the Dustin Poirier fight was a good option for Conor. Conor, shut up. Stop trying to act too good for it. Take the damn fight. Take a fight. Take any fight. We don't care. We just want to hear you shut up on social media and actually take a fight. I mean, give me a damn break. It's been, what, a year? More than a year?
Almost a year. October.
A year?
Yeah.
And then before that, another year. And so it's like, come on, man. Get in there and shut up.
You just wanted to fight already. No more tweets.
Let's fight. No more tweets. Let's fight already.
Okay. Speaking of tweets, what about you and Dylan Dennis? When's this footsie going to end?
Connor can tweet. He just can't tweet about fighting everyone or saying he's good for fighting everyone without hopping in there. So he can tweet about whatever he wants. Just not about saying, I'm tough. I'm going to fight unless you actually fight. Dylan Dennis, man, sometimes, Ariel, you know, we talk about Colby's IQ being Dylan Dennis. I mean, he just sets you up for some low-hanging fruit. I just can't help myself from responding. It's just when he says something about his kneecaps hurting, bro, why are your kneecaps hurting? I can only think of a couple reasons.
but why do you keep engaging?
Because it's too easy. He said his kneecaps hurt. Ariel, name me three reasons why your kneecaps could hurt.
I will not give you one.
Because you can only think of one. And you know what it is, and you won't say it on this program.
But why? Why do you have interest in competing against this man, or again, do you dislike poking him?
At this point, it's just poking. I mean, obviously, he challenged me to grappling matches, which I haven't partaken in a grappling match in many years. And after my MMA career, that's something I would definitely – I don't love grappling. I spent all my time coaching wrestling, doing wrestling, and so I don't really love grappling on the same level. Not saying that I would never participate in it. At this point, it's my mixed martial arts career, and when I'm done with that, if I – chose to partake in a grappling contest, I think it would probably be against Dylan Dennis.
Wow. Really? You're opening the door?
I didn't say I'm going to. I just said if I was going to grapple against someone, I feel like he would be the right guy to grapple against.
This is the first time you've actually sort of said that this is of interest to you. Yes.
Like I said, not till my MMA career is over, which who knows when that's going to be.
But I feel like this is a big deal. This is the first time you've actually sort of acknowledged the possibility of this happening.
Okay, Ariel, why were his kneecaps sore? Come on, man.
Wow, that would be big business. I'd love to see it. Submission Underground.
But you never know. Is Chael still going?
Yeah, see?
Yeah, I you know what? I felt bad because I was talking about Chael about doing a wrestling match in Submission Underground, and it just didn't work out. I would love to see help him get some big numbers over there. So, you know, I've watched his program a few times. It was really good. I watched the Dan Henderson, John Jones one. That was fun back in the day.
Yep. By the way, can you put in a good word for myself and Chael with Jordan Burroughs? I think he's really mad at us.
Why? Why would he be mad at you?
I remember that whole thing when he was about to compete against you and, you know, he was talking about fighting in MMA and saying he needed a lot of money. He wanted more money to do it and Chael got... You know,
that was Chael. Chael got mad.
Yeah, but I sort of sided with Chael. I said, you know, if you go after my guy, you're going after me too. You know, I'm very loyal like that.
Mm. Yeah, if I see him, I'll let him know that he should come back on your program. And
that'd be nice.
They're actually at the World Championships. That's in Kazakhstan this week. The United States Greco team did very poorly. Women start tomorrow, and then you men's freestyles after that.
Do you think he ever fights?
No, I don't think so. I think he's gonna close out his wrestling career in 2020. I think he's been intelligent with his money, unlike most of these MMA fighters. And I would never say never, but it would definitely surprise me if he did.
You were in Singapore recently with Damian Maia, correct?
Yeah.
What was that like? Squared off. Good.
Cordial. I got respect for him. I think he's got respect for me. Yeah.
No bad blood?
I don't have anything against him.
Does it feel a little less like, you know, with Masvidal, there was so much tension there. This time he's so nice and respected. Is it hard to get up for it?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, there haven't been, in my whole fighting career, I've had 20 fights now, there haven't been a huge amount of opponents who I've had really bad blood with. I mean, there's been a couple, but not a huge amount.
Okay. Do you have to go?
I do not have to go, no.
Okay. I only have a couple.
We can talk all day if you want to.
No, it's okay because I know we went a little late and I know you have an appointment, so I didn't want to.
I do. 1:45, I got a meeting with my lawyer.
Okay. What are you guys meeting about?
Well, I mean, if you really want to know, it's Aspen Wrestling Academy business. You know, we're growing by leaps and bounds. We're likely to open a couple more academies next year. And so I just want to make sure all my ducks are in a row. You know, business is freaking hard. I didn't do business in college. I did a geography major because I figured I was going to coach wrestling. And I guess I am coaching wrestling now, although it's running a business, not on the college level. And so, you want to really have all your ducks in a row when you go into business because there's so many things that you don't see coming and you run a small business. You're like, oh, what about this? What about that? You know, and just keep going.
You said on Twitter recently, I can't wait. You were retweeting a photo. You said, I can't wait for my WWE debut. Were you joking there?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to do it like a couple times. I would never really do it full time. If they were able to give me some type of guest spot, I would love it. I think it's fun. Jerry Briscoe, I've known him for many, many years. I think he's an awesome guy. And so, yeah, I was retweeting him.
By the way, speaking of tweets, Dylan Danis has actually tweeted about us right now. Do you want to hear what he had to say? Apparently he's watching.
Oh, sure. Why not? Is he going to tell us why his kneecaps are sore? That's the answer. That
no, actually, it was a good tweet. He said, biggest grappling match in the history of the sport, Dylan Danis versus at Ben Askren. Let's expletive do it.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what, you know, we talked about this before. It's like he has a gigantic amount to gain from this because although he wants to act like he's the biggest deal in Bellator, he's probably getting paid five and five or something to that effect. And so, yes, if I chose to grapple against Dylan Danis, I would make him significantly more money than he does in any of his Bellator fights. And so I will entertain the possibility of that when I'm done with my mixed martial arts career.
Wow. I have to say my mind is blown. I can't believe you're actually entertaining this. Before, you've always brushed us kind of like the way you were sort of weirdly enough.
I think I've said before that I'm not doing anything until my mixed martial arts career is over. And when that happens, then I would.
No, this is way more promising.
What did I say before?
The door is just wide open now. Like before, you know those questions I just asked you about Damian Maia and you got weirdly uncomfortable and didn't want to answer anything about him? It was always like that.
Really?
It was always like that. Now you're like fully into it.
Okay.
Why were you so uncomfortable when I asked you about Maia?
I don't believe I was. I just didn't have much to say. It's like, he's a good fighter. I like him. I don't really have a huge amount to say about it.
Okay.
That's it.
Just a couple more. Khabib Nurmagomedov, greatest grappler in the history of the sport. True or false?
Man, he does a great job, doesn't he? He kills Dustin.
Isn't it amazing?
I thought it would be slightly more competitive. You know, there are not a lot of great wrestlers at 155. Mm-hmm. You know, Gaethje would be interesting. Obviously, he was a good, not great wrestler. Doesn't use his wrestling at all in mixed martial arts. So it would be interesting to see if he retained any of those wrestling skills enough to stuff takedowns. You know, someone like Johnny Hendricks, I remember, was obviously a very high-level college wrestler, but kind of lost skills as he got older because he got away from the sport. You know, 155, another great wrestler is Gregor Gillespie.
Oh yeah,
interesting to see how he would do in there. You know, he's just not getting the big fights to move up, and so there just isn't a lot of really high level wrestlers on top of that division. And so, I guess, can you name a really high level grappler that Khabib has fought against?
Who's the highest? I mean, that's the thing.
Let me go look at his record.
Gleison Tibau. He had a tough time with him.
That was a long time ago. Yeah, Gleison had
Ally Quinta.
Ella Quinta is a decent wrestler. So there aren't a lot of high-level wrestlers in that division, which makes me question. I mean, so I am definitely considering saying yes to that, but it would be interesting to see him against, you know, say, Gregor Gillespie or Justin Gaethje, or the obvious is GSP. I mean, when you go through his past guys, they're almost all strikers. Not really any wrestlers on that list, which is fascinating that, you know, you look at 170, it's not only all wrestlers, but a really high proportion of wrestlers. You look at 155, there's not a lot of wrestlers up on top of that division. It's really funny how that works out.
But by the way, last thing, what do you make of this Michelle Pajeda character?
Is that the guy doing the flips? Is that who you're asking me about?
Yes. Good or bad? Do you understand what he's doing? Or?
Yeah. I think it's dumb. I mean, so I think here's for me, I think the point of mixed martial arts is to win or lose. And so when you're acting like a dumbass and doing these flips and whatnot, and then you literally gas out because of that, lose a fight to a guy who is actually lightweight, who took the fight on 5 days' notice, who you were a gigantic favorite over, man, you need to rethink your strategy. Heavily rethink your strategy.
All right. And we'll leave it at that. Ben, it's always good to catch up. October 26th, Ben Askren, Damian Maia. Weirdly enough, he wanted to not talk about the fight or sell it or anything. It was very bizarre, but maybe we'll have you on before the fight one more time to talk about it. Maybe then you'll feel a little more into it.
Peace.
Thank you, Ben. All the best. We'll talk to you soon. There he goes. All right. Well, that was fun. Okay. Good stuff there from Ben Askren. let's switch gears now and say hello to our next guest. Before we do so, of course, we saw him just, what, 9 or so days ago in Abu Dhabi, fought valiantly against Khabib Nurmagomedov, appeared to rock him in the second round, had him in that guillotine in the third, unfortunately fell short against the champ Khabib. We're talking about Dustin Poirier. This is what he said in the post-fight press conference moments after the loss in Abu Dhabi.
I just didn't do enough, you know, and I have to live with it for the rest of my life. I've just been through so much in my fighting career. It's like, I don't know what's next, you know? I thought, honestly, the last 10 weeks of training camp and preparing for this fight, I thought the stars were aligning and I thought this was my night, you know? I thought this was like destiny, but I don't want to just keep crying up here in front of you guys, man, but this just means a lot to me.
He's one of the most beloved fighters in the game, wears his heart on his sleeve 11 days later. Very excited to talk to Dustin Poirier, who's kind enough to be joining us on the phone, who I think is in the midst of a road trip right now. Is that right, Dustin?
Hey, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Awesome. Yeah, man, I'm on the road with my family.
Where are we off to? Vacation?
Yeah, I'm right outside of Pensacola, Florida right now. Just got out of Alabama. We're driving to Destin, Florida for 6 days just to get away, decompress, and kind of just relax, you know?
Yeah, well, that is certainly well-deserved. I appreciate you doing this in the midst of that road trip. Dustin, you know, we saw that footage. We saw the way you were feeling. You were so sad. You were so heartbroken. But I'm wondering, even like after that, I remember seeing on social media around 12 hours later, you even alluded to the fact that if I do fight again, we'll have to see what happens. It sounds like a week later, like I was kind of surprised when I heard you say that, if I do fight again. Are you considering not fighting again?
No, I just was, like you just heard in that clip you played, you know, my whole career. And then obviously a 10-week training camp was preparing me for that night. And I felt like I did everything I could to be ready for that fight. And you know, I got beat and it was just, I was in my feelings, man, and it hurt. So sitting in my hotel room, I said that, but that was just emotional, you know. Of course I'm going to fight again.
Okay.
You guys are going to punch themselves in the face.
You obviously were down afterwards and you had every right to be. I'm wondering if you have regrets about your performance. Like, are you thinking about it a lot? Are you wishing you did X, Y, and Z differently in that fight?
Of course, man. Like I said, I'm going to question things that happen, you know, for the rest of my life. Listen, before every fight, when I'm in the locker room, I kind of have a second with myself and I know that in the next 15 minutes, if it's a 3-round fight, or the next 25 minutes, if it's a main event or a title fight, I kind of tell myself that whatever happens in this next 15 or 25 minutes, to stay tough, to stay focused, because that 15 or 25 minutes is going to last the rest of my life. And I understand that every time I step in there. And you know, I had a loss of focus. My concentration wasn't right and I made a mistake. And now for the rest of my life, I have to live with it. That's just what it is. That's how life works sometimes. All the time. Yeah.
When you say a loss of focus and the concentration wasn't right, what are you referring to?
You know, not protecting my neck area. I've been doing this for a long time, man. I've had the best guys on top of me. You know, getting, of course, Khabib is the best in the world, but getting rear naked choked is something that I'm so much better than allowing that to happen. You know, it's one thing if my guy hurts me and I go down and I know what's going on. In the moment, and that's a half. Just, you know, I don't know, man. I just feel like I was.
And we might be losing you. Dustin, do you hear me? Dustin, are you still there?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, sorry. I think we lost you there very briefly. Was that the hardest defeat to deal with? I mean, like I said, you always wear your emotions on your sleeve. I remember talking to you after the Korean Zombie fight in Fairfax, Virginia many moons ago, and you were obviously very upset after that one. But considering the stakes and how you were feeling going into the fight, has this one been the toughest to deal with thus far?
They all hurt, man. It all hurts so much because I put so much into it, man. And this is my craft. This is what I do. And I pride myself on you know, work and my skill set. It hurts. It hurts more than I can explain to you. I don't know if I'm sure there's somebody out there who does something that they love and that they're passionate about, and they do everything they can to be the best, and they fall short. You know, maybe they have a similar feeling, but I can't explain to you how it feels. It feels horrible. You know? As I'm getting older and more mature, it's just a part of my life, fighting it. But at the same time, it's so much to me, man. It's so much to me. So this hurts a lot.
The fact that you suffer so much after these particular fights, does it make you not want to do it as much? Like to go through these emotions? Does that deter you from getting back in there and investing so much of your time and effort and your emotions into these fights?
No, man. I'm a sick person. It makes me want to do better, do more, come back stronger, show them another lesson that I've learned, dust myself off again, show you that I can do it, show myself that I can do it. It motivates me, man. It sucks to get on these streaks and get so close to the mountaintop and then get knocked down again. But I'm familiar with that, man. I'm familiar with, I promise you, I'm going to rise again. I'm going to get my hand raised. I'm going to beat who I have to beat, and I'll be back knocking on that door again. It's just, I hate having to dust myself off over and over again, but this is my story, man. This is my past. I don't try to look for an explanation of why this happened. I know I'm one of the best in the world. And when it all does finally come together, it's going to be beautiful, and it's my story, and I understand that. So I'm just going to keep grinding, keep getting better. But at the same time, it is, you know, it's a love-hate relationship. I love this so much that sometimes I hate it. And, you know, it just keeps breaking my heart, but I keep coming back. Like that relationship when you're, you know, like a girlfriend, or that something that just keeps breaking your heart and you just keep coming back to it. I can't stop. I will not stop. I know I have greatness in me, man, and I'm going to show the world. I just have to keep grinding.
Was Khabib tougher than you thought he would be?
No. He was, technically very balanced. His weight distribution, I know I've said it before, a lot of people probably don't understand what I'm saying. But when you've been grappling and spent the amount of hours on the mats with the best guys in the world, you can feel their IQ and their understanding of positions. And he's very good at his awareness positionally, his weight distribution positionally when he's on top. He doesn't use a lot of strength. Honestly, I felt a similar feeling when I rolled with Marcelo Garcia in New York a long time ago. They're letting their body and their body mechanics do a lot of the work. They're not straining and giving up a lot of energy. He's a special individual, but I can beat him. I let myself down that night, and it sucks.
Have you ever grappled with someone who, you know, was consistently putting their hand over your face like he was in that first round? Have you ever dealt with that before?
No. I haven't. In the second Eddie fight, Eddie was doing some weird stuff, like grabbing my face and putting his finger in my ear and pulling my head, trying to get my neck. But I haven't.
How do you feel about that? Like, do you feel like that's clean?
As long as the fingers aren't going inside the eyes or inside the mouth or, like, you know, that kind of stuff, I don't see why not. If we can knee each other in the face, why can't we grab each other's face like that?
Right. What about being in Abu Dhabi for that stretch of, like, did you feel comfortable there? Did you seem like you know, there was that talk of you being in enemy territory, but then you were greeted. I mean, what a great, scene that was when you came off the plane, you were greeted. Did you feel comfortable fighting outdoors? It was super hot, I'm told. What was the experience like?
It was incredible. The best fight trip I've ever had. The people were the best I've ever been around. It was the most welcoming city I've ever fought in. You know, it was amazing. Everything was perfect except my performance. I have no complaints. It wasn't that hot. I know I see a lot of people saying that. I felt good. It felt, you know, maybe because I'm from Louisiana and train in South Florida, I'm used to the humidity and heat. Of course, it was hotter and more humid than it is there, but maybe because I'm tempered to it a little bit, I didn't notice that. It was a great trip. If I can do anything different, I would be more in the moment for that 25 minutes. I felt like I let my mindset slip away, and you know, in fighting that matters most. I just felt like I wasn't as focused as I needed to be from bell to bell. And also, I would go there a little early. I had a lot of trouble sleeping.
Okay. How much in advance did you go there?
I went there 8 full days, I believe.
Okay. And what do you think would have been better?
I would have done at least two full weeks.
Okay.
You know, there were nights where I was sleeping 3 hours and had media obligations early. A lot of nights I couldn't fall asleep until 4 a.m.
Wow.
But I didn't feel that. I got to sleep in during the fight. I took a nap that day. I was caught up on sleep. That's no excuse, but that's the only thing looking back that I would change besides my performance and focus during when it mattered most. I would go a little earlier.
Did you think you rocked them in the beginning of the second round?
I know I touched him and hurt him. I can tell his body language. The punch didn't land flush, but it skimmed him. With the way you're pulling back like that, I feel like receiving a shot, your body's not in good position. You know, you get hurt easier, more easily whenever you're pulling back like that and your body isn't sitting solid. I just couldn't touch him again. He was hurt for sure. I just couldn't touch him again. He's very awkward, Ariel. I couldn't get a rhythm. I couldn't get anything going. He's herky-jerky. His up and down movements are strange. It was hard to get a read on him in the stand up the little bit we did have.
What about in the third round with the guillotine? How close did that feel?
That's another thing I got to live the rest of my life with. Why didn't I go full guard? You know, I think in the back of my head, I normally can finish a guillotine with one hook in. You know, obviously that one leg was stopping it from passing my guard and relieving the pressure of the choke. So that's why I kept that leg over. But why did I have a good guillotine? Why didn't I go full guard and you know, I could have rolled over with him. I would have been in mount when he tried to roll. If I would have went full guard, I probably could have put more pressure. But those are all looking in the rear view. If I could have done a lot of different things, you know, but none of that matters. But it just sucks to think about all that stuff, you know, try not to beat myself up about all those things.
Great moment afterwards with you guys, you know, swapping shirts and him saying that he was going to donate all the proceeds to your charity after selling the shirt. Were you expecting that from him? And in the moment, like, were you, there's a lot going on in your mind. Like, are you even aware of what's going on in that moment?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I have enough experience where things kind of slow down in there and I don't get too carried away with adrenaline and stuff. It was great. I had no clue he was going to do that. He raised a lot of money, you know, the biggest donation, obviously, we've ever had with the foundation, and we're going to do great things with it. He's going to help a lot of people out with his contribution, and it's incredible, man, to see the fighters starting to donate things, and just the growth that the foundation has had in the last year and a half is incredible. I'm really grateful. I have a lot of things to be grateful for, and you know, those things make me smile, man. That's sunshine for sure.
Are you able to say how much that shirt went for?
Khabib donated $100,000 to the foundation.
Wow. All from one shirt?
Yeah, I believe so. I don't know if he auctioned it off or he just had somebody offer him, you know, $100,000 for the shirt. I'm not sure. I haven't had a chance to speak with him personally and thank him. I've only spoke to his manager, but he donated the money. It's in the foundation account. And, it happened, man. It's incredible.
And Dana White's matching that, correct?
I don't know. Dana's a man of his word. I expect him to. If he said, which I've seen clips of him saying that he was going to match whatever Khabib donated, but I haven't spoken to him personally. So.
Okay. So as of right now, for this particular fight camp, how much have you raised?
Well, we set the goal of 25,000. I think we overshot that by 7,000 or 8,000. So we raised 32,000 or 33,000. For the original goal of the well in the water tower for the Pygmy people. But I'm going to hop on a call later on at the end of this week with Justin Wren and his organization. And we're going to talk more about, because he had set an overflow goal of 50K. And that would be able to build a few more water wells in neighboring villages and things like that. So I want to go all out and do everything we can. So we're going to hop on a call later this week and get some more stuff ironed out. And, I mean, we demolished this goal that we had.
Incredible. You emerged early last week with this tweet, kind of moving on from the fight and looking to the future. You said, I think me and Connor running it back makes a lot of sense at this point. And that exploded, 54,000 likes on Twitter alone. Why do you want that fight next?
You know, now I think I'm number two in the rankings. He's number three. If we're respecting the rankings, I think the fight makes sense. Everybody else around us is booked. We both lost to the same guy in a world title fight. you know, financially, it makes a lot of sense. If the guy, for me, if the guy's not going to fight, they got to take him out of the rankings because he's just going to keep log jamming an already top heavy division. So we got to get it figured out, you know, because before I took off to drive out here with my family, I wasn't trying to put all the pieces together too quick. But I was thinking I want to fight before my birthday, January 19th. I want to have another fight before I'm 31 years old, just as a goal of mine. And we'll see what opportunities and what fights line up at the beginning of January or end of December and take it from there. But I think Connor's a great fight.
Did you see his response to you? And if so, what did you make of it?
Yeah, of course I saw what he said. You know, I'm not going on online to bash the guy, or, you know, just if it's that easy, just do it again. And, you know, again, then try to beat your record. What did you get me in last time? 2 minutes? Try to do a minute 30. Let's see if you can do that.
To the best of your knowledge, does the UFC seem interested in this fight, in this rematch?
I haven't really spoke to anybody. I would think they would be, you know, but man, I'm all ears. I just want a good fight. For me, I want a fight that's exciting, a fight that motivates me. You know, I still have a lot of fights left in me, but at the same time, I don't want to fight just to fight. I want it to be something on the line, whether that's the next title shot or my legacy or just something more than just the fight. I want it to be very motivating for me, and he's a guy that would be motivating to fight.
And one last thing on Connor. Do you feel like you were disrespectful towards him? Because he said you should have spoken my name with a bit more respect in the build-up.
Nah, man, not at all. All I said was I think a rematch makes sense, you know. Listen, I don't speak negative about people. You know, I try my best to find the good in people and stay positive. So I'm not talking trash about people. Even if I dislike you, I'm not going to. You know, I'll tell you to your face. I don't go online and talk trash and do this stuff anymore.
I do have to ask if you don't mind about Colby Covington, because he responded to your comments about him in the post-fight press conference. And I'm wondering, like, how can Colby Covington go back to ATT now with, you know, there's an issue there with you. There's an issue with Masvidal. Won't that be uncomfortable if you see him at the gym? Masvidal sees him at the gym. I don't recall in my time covering this sport a teammate being discussed or talking about other teammates or teammates talking about, like, it just seems like a situation that will not work out well for anyone. How do you feel about him being at the gym if you're there the next time?
I'll show you. You'll read about it. I'll actually be there. I'm not in Florida right now, that part of Florida. I'm in Louisiana and driving to the panhandle of Florida right now. But I'll be back at American Top Team around October 10th. I'm gonna go out there, train a few days, and then drive up to Tampa for the event. So, you know, you, Ariel, you're bringing me back to the negative side right now, man.
I'm sorry.
You're pulling me back to the dark side, but I'll be there the 10th through the 12th. So if Kobe wants to go to the gym any one of those days, I got something for him.
I'm just curious, like, was there an issue with you guys in the past, or did you just not like the character that he's become now?
Man, I really don't want to sit here and talk negative about anybody.
Okay.
If I see him in person, you'll read about it.
Okay. Fair enough. One last thing. Did you watch the Cerrone-Gaethje fight this weekend?
I did, man. Gaethje's looking good, man. He's really putting guys away, and Cowboy's a tough guy to put away.
A very impressive performance. You guys are, I mean, you have a history with Justin, of course, not that long ago. You fought him and looked very good against him. So it seems like there's some jockeying for position there. You said that your birthday's in January. Does that December 14th card seem to be the best spot for you? Is that the one that you like best?
I'd like to fight at the beginning of the year if they have something first 2 weeks of January. But we'll see. If something makes sense, of course.
Okay. I appreciate you doing this, Dustin. Thank you very much. And congratulations on a phenomenal performance. And it's just amazing to see. You know, I've talked to DC about this. I've talked to Ben about this as well. It's amazing to see in this sport, more so than any other sport, when someone suffers a loss, a heartbreaking loss, but they just show some emotion and you kind of feel for them and the journey and you get invested. you become even more popular. It's a weird thing. Like sometimes you even become more popular in a loss than you would in a win. And I feel like that's what's happening to you now, just like looking at social media. Have you noticed that as well? Like now just seeing like the nut, like you're, I think you're over a million Instagram followers, all this stuff. People don't really seem to care as long as you, you know, you put yourself out there, you wear your emotion on your sleeve, and it seems like this means a lot to you. And I feel like that phenomenon is happening to you right now. I'm wondering if you noticed that.
Yeah, 100%. This last fight, I've noticed it more than ever in my career, with the messages, the emails, just people reaching out and showing support. And like I said, I'm going to show you again. You know, my wife was telling me she doesn't think I realize how many people are watching and that I motivate. And that's not my goal. You know, my goal is to be the best fighter. But if there are people out there watching me struggle and watching me overcome, I'm going to show you an example of that again, because I promise you, I'm going to get my hand raised. I'm going to climb back from this. And that's just, like I said, that's just my journey. That's just the path that I'm on. And been, I don't know why, but that's just what happens with me. And I want to show you how to overcome stuff.
Well, glad to hear you will continue to fight and that you're in a better place this week than you were last week. Enjoy your time with your family, Dustin. And thank you so much for doing this in the midst of the road trip. I really appreciate it.
No problem, man. Thank you.
All right. There he is, Dustin Poirier. Always a class act, has done amazing stuff for the less fortunate with his Good Fight Foundation, which you can learn more about online with goodfightfoundation.org. And as he mentioned, they blew past their goal of raising $25,000 for the Pygmy people with the Justin Wren Fight for the Forgotten charity. And amazing to hear that Khabib donated $100,000. I wonder if I didn't even see like the link for that auction for that shirt. Remember they swapped t-shirts after the fight. He wore Dustin's shirt and Dustin wore Khabib's shirt, and he said that he was going to auction it off. And last week Javier Mendez told us that they tried to go back. So after each fight, someone who works for the UFC takes a piece of clothing and I think they sign it and they give it off to the memorabilia company that works with the UFC, Fanatics, I think, and they wanted that shirt, and Khabib said he would not give them that shirt, so he signed his gloves, which are very valuable, and gave those away per the agreement that the fighters have with the promotion. They have to give up something, and so they wanted that, but he said no. And so, as we just heard, he's donating $100,000, and Dana White said he's going to match it, and we assume that he will follow through on that. So that is pretty amazing. That's 200 right there, plus the 30,000 plus. It's a pretty amazing thing. And again, each week I do this thing called honorable mention, where I try to highlight the good people doing good things in the sport. Dustin is a consistent presence on that list because he continues to do great things for the less fortunate. Didn't want to get into the Colby stuff. I understand. That continues to be a very interesting story to follow. As we were talking about with Ben, as of right now, Colby versus Usman isn't done. It sounds like they're both kind of holding out and doing so in unison. I don't think they're working together, but it does seem like they're kind of unofficially working together without really speaking. Reminiscent of the Nate Diaz, Conor McGregor situation from around 3+ years ago. And so as of right now, there is no welterweight title fight made for December 14th. And I'm not sure if there is going to be one. I suspect that it's a very interesting game of chicken being played right now. And one wonders how it's going to play out. In this particular case, the UFC tends to win. And especially when you have a guy like Leon Edwards, who is certainly deserving of a title shot, just sort of waiting in the wings, it's easier for them to move on. Now, Edwards versus Usman isn't as lucrative and as big of a fight as Usman versus Covington, but you do have an option there. It's not like you're just pulling some random guy who isn't worthy of this fight. You do have a guy just sitting there waiting, and I don't think the negotiations, from what I understand, with Edwards will be as difficult. So that's the game of chicken. Who's going to bite first? It doesn't sound like the UFC is budging. Doesn't sound like Colby is budging. Wants them to budge. They're not budging. Same with Usman. What's going to happen? So we'll see what happens. Ben said that there are already two title fights booked for that card. There's only really one. It's Jermaine Durandamy versus Amanda Nunes for the women's 135-pound title. There could be a second in Max Holloway versus Alex Volkanovski, but that's not booked just yet. I think there could be three. One that will not be on it as of right now is John Jones versus Jan Blachowicz. Brett Okamoto of ESPN reporting last week that Jan is actually going to fight Jacare in Jacare's 205-pound debut in the UFC. And so now you wonder, okay, what's up with John? John tweeting early last week that he's got big plans, buckle up. As of right now, I'm told there is no big plan set, but I wouldn't be surprised if that big plan is him finally moving up to heavyweight. There's nothing bigger than that right now. Either it's DC or Stipe. There's nothing bigger at 205 than that. And people have been wanting to see John move up to heavyweight for a very long time. I think he's starting to come around to the idea that as of right now, like, you can fight a lot of the same characters, you know, Thiago Santos and, you know, guys who are very tough, but not big names. Anthony Smith, tough guys, but not money fights, if you will. You move up to heavyweight, you fight the heavyweight champion. That's a big fight. That's a money fight. And right now I feel like there's a little bit of pressure on John because a lot of the champions have moved up. Amanda moved up. DC moved up. Connor moved up. GSP moved up. We've seen a string of guys moving up when for the longest time that didn't happen. So I think he's starting to sense that. So that's December 14th. Could he end up on that card? Yeah, he's definitely not ending up on the MSG card. That's 100%. There was some talk of him fighting on MSG. There is going to be no official title fight on that card. It is going to be Nate Diaz versus Jorge Masvidal for the fictitious BMF title. That's going to be the main event. And actually, they're going to be in New York this week doing some press, so we'll get a glimpse of those two guys together. Let me see here. I just got a text, by the way, from here. I'm going to send this to you, Corporate Jake. In the boxing world, they announced last week that Canelo Alvarez and Sergey Kovalev are going to fight on November 2nd as well. So they're going to go up against the BMF title fight. That's in Las Vegas. I feel like the UFC fight is going to do better business-wise. We're talking about two different things here because one is on ESPN Plus pay-per-view and the other is on DAZN. But I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm living in the bubble. I feel like Diaz... Am I crazy for thinking that Diaz-Masvidal is a bigger fight than Canelo-Sergey Kovalev? Canelo-Sergey Kovalev is a very big fight. I understand that. I recognize that in the boxing world. But I feel like Diaz-Masvidal transcends the MMA world. I don't know if Canelo Kovalev is as big of a deal in the mainstream sports world. Am I crazy? Am I crazy for feeling this way? It feels like Diaz-Masvidal is a bigger fight, mainstream-wise. Like, did you see Masvidal on Lebatard? Did you see him on Highly Questionable? The guy is a star. He is a mainstream star. 16 years into his career, he is actually a star. Who would have thought? And so I hate when they go toe-to-toe. Like, I like this past Saturday when it was UFC, and I know it was all on ESPN Plus, but it was UFC, it ended, and then we went to Tyson Fury. And how great was that fight against Otto Wallin? Again, you think it's going to be a walk in the park. You think it's going to be, you know, a tune-up fight, just like Andy Ruiz and Anthony Joshua. And look what happens. This crazy cut. And how about Tyson Fury's cut, man? I saw people criticizing him for putting on too much Vaseline. That guy single-handedly saved Tyson Fury. If it wasn't for that guy, and I have his name, by the way. I should try to shout him out here. If it wasn't for that cut, man, Jorge Capitillo. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly. That cut man did a phenomenal job. He single-handedly saved Tyson Fury in that fight. Tyson Fury would not be the lineal champion. Like, it was fascinating just to watch the way he was working in between rounds and doing whatever he could to stop that cut from getting worse and bleeding even more. That was incredible. high drama in Las Vegas. Fury wins. Now, hopefully, we'll get to see the Joshua fight. But that was a great night. You had the Vancouver card. It ends. And then we went straight to Las Vegas with Fury Joshua. How about ESPN Plus? Can I just say, NFL Primetime is back. $4.99. I mean, this is a steal. It's like 16 cents a day if you spread it out over 365 days. Isn't that incredible? Unbelievable. What a steal. Okay, I'm done. Oh, I should have done an ad right there, shouldn't I? Yeah, Corporate Jake, slipping. It's okay. It's been quite the day here. I'll tell you about that a little later on. For now, though, let's go to our next guest. She is standing by. I've been trying to talk to her for quite some time. She's the one and only Kat Zingano joining us right now. Kat, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How's it going, Ariel?
It's going great. I appreciate you doing this. So we have a lot to discuss, but I'd be remiss if I don't start with this first. You are no longer a member of the UFC. This kind of came out of nowhere. What happened? What led to your release last month?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it was a shock to everybody. I mean, UFC included. You know, there were some things that were what's best for me that kind of went, you know, awry with what's best for them. And it ended up being a good decision for the moment to close the chapter and part ways. You know, there were some things that I was working on that, you know, were very, very important to me, to fighters, to MMA community, to just people in general. And I mean, my kid, my family, my well-being, and I just wanted to, you know, do right by it and own it and be healthy with that decision. And so, you know, and then they had the things that they needed as well. So I guess we, you know, that's what it looks like for now. Yeah, it's rough. But
were there issues leading up to this, or did it just kind of come out of nowhere?
I mean, there was a bit of a struggle. I was filming for something, again, really important. And, you know, it was very tricky with how to balance the time with it. You know, it was something that took all my attention and I wasn't able to really train. I was very proud of this project and it just, you know, it wasn't working with the schedule. So in order to be safe and intelligent with what I was trying to do as far as both avenues of my time, you know, it came down to having to pick a path. And for right now, like I said, that meant parting ways with the UFC. I have to be extremely grateful. I mean, the UFC has offered me so many open doors in my life and my world, and who knows if it's done forever, but for right now, that's what's right. And I mean, there's so many options, and it's just what's up right now, I guess, you know.
So this project that you're talking about, we just showed the graphic right over there. Is that the Why We Fight show that you're hosting that's actually on ESPN Plus right now, the Ronda Rousey Project Season 2? Was that what you were working on that led to some of these scheduling issues?
Yeah. And then, I mean, it's an incredible show. And it, you know, it advocates a lot for us fighters and why we fight and how some people need to use fighting as ways of coping in their life. I mean, it's really getting deep and down into exactly what the title says, like why people fight and how they fight and different ways that they fight. And, you know, it felt very dear to me, especially having gone through a lot and having fighting be so cathartic for me, that it meant a lot to me to complete that project in a way that I could be proud of, in a way that serves people, in a way that I also, you know, feel dignified by. And yeah, I had some really heavy hitters as far as the people helping produce it. And I still think it's going to be great. And I stand by my decision. I believe the UFC is standing by their decision. There's no bad blood at the moment. You know, I don't think there will be. It's just what needs to happen right now. And I'm super excited for people to see this show. Like it's incredible. It's worth it.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of the episodes, and it is phenomenal. The first season was very good as well, and it's on ESPN Plus, full disclosure, but I've enjoyed it. They put a bunch of the episodes up already on the platform, so you can watch them right now. How many months or weeks did you need to invest in working on that show? Like, how long did that put you out of the active fight game, so to speak?
So I actually got cleared to fight on the show. So about halfway through the show, you know, one of the episodes I was at the doctor and they were looking at my eye and checking out the visceral fluid, which was where I was having the struggles with, you know, healing. and I got the great news that I was cleared to fight. However, I was on the road for that show for a good 4.5 months. Like, I'd be home 3 days, gone 5 days, be back 2 days, gone 1 day. Like, it was all over the world. It was all over the place and visiting different people. And I, you know, in trade, it was a little inconsistent as far as, you know, my job with the UFC, which is to train every day and to go home and be present with my kid every day and to have, you know, that kind of consistency that goes into getting ready for a fight, especially the fights that I want, especially the title run that I'm gearing up to make. So it's, you know, the shock, it's, you know, it's what's up right now, but, I am extremely proud of this project. Rhonda's proud of this project. All the producers and people that came into it, ESPN's proud of this project. Like, it is, it's a good thing. It happened and it's happening. And, you know, who knows what doors open next.
Of course, last time we saw you in action was against Megan Anderson when you suffered that gruesome eye injury. You mentioned clear, like, how is it feeling now? And how bad was the recovery? How tough was that?
I mean, the recovery is very tough. It's very strange how crazy an eye injury like that is. You know, at first I was very shocked. You know, I thought I was going blind. I wasn't sure that I was not going to have like a weird David Bowie eye for the rest of my life.
Oh, no.
Which I would have been fine with. That's cool. But, you know, I've healed. I'm blessed to have incredible recovery as far as my health. And, yeah, it took a while. You know, there were some symptoms that would just come back as soon as I got my heart rate going. And, you know, it had to have me sit my butt down and kind of give it time. And, yeah, I feel great now. I am ready to get going now that these other things are over. And yeah, we'll see. There's so many awesome options coming right now. Like, I can't even hate everything that's happened because it's left the door open. And I'm going to take my time and do what's right and do what's right for me, do what's right for everyone, and make some smart decisions.
Before I ask you about what's next, was there an offer on the table for you to come back and fight for the UFC? Is that what kind of led to the disagreement? Like, did they offer you a date or an opponent or anything like that, which you couldn't commit to?
Yeah. I mean, there was, like I said, there was what was best for them and then there was what was best for me. And I couldn't safely and intelligently get ready for the things that were going on. And, you know, I understand they have a calendar, they have an agenda. I have to consider what's right for them. I have to consider what's right for me. And it just wasn't matching up. It wasn't seeing eye to eye on how that needed to look. So, the show must go on. You know, they're going to do what's best for their business. I'm going to do what's best for me. And who knows? Who knows what the future holds? Who knows what they want? You know, you can't unhappen all of the things that happened with me in the UFC. You know, I was the first mom in history. I was the first TKO. In history, I was the first women's fight of the night in history. I got the most takedowns in history as of last year. I got, you know, a lot that's gone on with that sport that I'm, you know, a big part of, and I can never regret that that's where I went and I did it. I'm still the last person to beat Amanda Nunes, and until those things get surpassed, like, I own those things, and I'm proud of that. So it's, you know, it's No bad blood. I'm happy from where I came from. I'm happy for the road that being in the UFC paved for me. It's just, this is what has to happen right now for some reason. And, you know, I'm moving through it in a healthy way, and we'll see what's next.
So you say no bad blood. There's no hard feelings about how this ended so abruptly. You're at peace with it all.
I mean, I just have to be grateful. Like, I can't sit and have regret for things that I can't do. I don't regret any decision I made in this whole process. I don't know how they're sitting and feeling. Like, there hasn't been a ton of communication. I definitely didn't see this being how this chapter ended. You know, I loved what I was doing. I loved the, you know, stuff that was going on in my life and what it meant and how it made me still feel very connected to my roots and my purpose. But that doesn't mean that those things are over. It just means it's on a different platform, probably. So, it hurt. And there's obviously some grieving and some health self-care I have to do right now. But I can't look at it as a bad thing. Like, it just is. You know, it just is. And I get to move forward however I move forward. And we'll see. Like, I'm very optimistic about what's next, and I'm very excited about the, all these incredible options. So none of that would have happened if I would have stayed sitting where I was.
And one last thing on the past. We had Holly Holm on the show a couple weeks ago. She said there was an offer on the table for you guys to fight. Is that accurate from your perspective, and was that a fight that you were interested in if the schedules could align?
Oh, God, so interested. I mean, me and Holly are both OGs. You know, like, everybody wants to see what would happen in that fight, including her, including me. You know what I mean? Like, it's a great stylistic matchup. Like, we're both girls that have been around from the beginning and have been making, breaking, and setting records along the way. Like, that fight would have been incredible. And, yeah, we've been offered each other a few times. Never really understood what the math was as far as why it did or didn't happen. And, yeah, we recently got offered each other. But, again, it was it's about being intelligent with things and with timing, and you know, how cool would it be to revisit at some other time, but it's not what's in the cards as of right now, I guess.
Okay, so let's talk about what is in the cards. Have you signed with anyone else?
No, at the moment I'm just watching these options. I'm watching the possibilities, and it's incredible. Like, I feel extremely supported. Like, I feel honored, and, like, it's very cool to see what I have done in the sport provides for me, and just the different avenues that it can create. So, you know, I'm taking care of myself right now. I'm waiting for the time to be right, and I'm going to make a healthy decision with what I want to do and take my time doing that. So I'm just sitting pretty right now, hanging out, and kind of watching it roll in, and watch everything that's going on. The show comes out soon, and I'm excited for people to see it, and I feel like that's also going to describe a bit about what I am doing here and why I'm doing it, and you know, that'll speak to what I want to do next as well.
Are you close?
What is close? What do you mean close?
Are you close to deciding where you will fight next?
I mean, yes, there's definitely some things that are making me lean more in certain directions than others. Right now it's like, it's all great. You know, it's all good. And I want to, you know, one thing with the UFC is, it's definitely a change in identity. It's definitely a change in what I thought I was doing. And so I really want to be smart and calculated with what it is that I decide to do next. And that takes, you know, a lot of feeling out and, you know, getting introduced and understanding the different dynamics of different companies and what I want my, you know, next 5 years to look like. So it's really weighing out all of this stuff and just seeing what ends up being the best fit.
My understanding is there's a lot of interest out there, and that there's several promotions who are wanting to be in the Katsingano business and pay you quite well. Are you surprised at all in the interest in what's out there? It's been a while since you've been a quote unquote free agent.
Yeah. I mean, it's an honor. Like, I feel so honored, you know, like, I feel so honored and so respected, and like that all of this came with some really great sides to it. Like, that part is huge and big and definitely makes things feel a little bit better. So, I mean, I'm not surprised because I know what I bring and I know what I'm willing to do and I know what I have to offer. Like, I'm in the game of gold. I'm here trying to put on the best fights in history and create myself a legacy and, you know, cause these incredible conversations of how my descendants will speak of me. And, you know, so that's really what I'm doing. It's really what I'm excited about. So I'm excited to see that people see me the way that I've been working my ass off to be seen. And I'm honored. I'm very complimented by the support I'm getting from the whole community.
It seems like the most obvious choice is Bellator because they just signed Chris. They have 145. They have 135. Scott Coker has talked about having interest in you. Have you talked to Bellator personally? Have you talked to anyone from that organization?
Yeah, I've talked to everybody. You know, and everybody's great and they're awesome and they're super sweet and supportive and yeah, I mean, everybody, I feel like, gets to win in all of this, depending on where it goes. And, I mean, not even depending on where it goes. I just feel like it's motivating and there'll be new structure. There'll be a blank sheet of paper to start on. And, like, I'm motivated to make a huge entrance on what that ends up looking like. So, you know, it's a new chapter, and I want to set it off with a bang, and I'm ready.
Are you hoping to fight again this year, or do you think it's too late at this point?
You know, I'm not sure. There's just so many boxes that I need to check as far as kind of dealing with the stuff that's in my hands at the exact moment. I mean, ideally, yes, I wanted to fight by the end of this year. That was the plan. That was the goal. But, you know, obviously some of those plans changed, and I have to see what ends up being the smartest decision. But, I mean, I would love to. I'd love to. That was how I was expecting it to go once my eye got cleared. But, you know, we'll see. Time will tell.
Is there a front runner right now? Is there an organization that's kind of leading the pack?
Yeah, I guess. I think so. You know, I mean, like, I feel real supported, and I'm getting to know some of the people that are higher up and in these promotions, and they're proving to be pretty awesome. So we'll see. Like I said, I got to weigh it out, do what's right for me, for my kid, for what I want to accomplish within, you know, the next 5 years. And I'm kind of in the middle of digesting and figuring out what I want that to look like.
Can you give us a hint?
I mean, I got a bucket list going, Ariel. You know, there's some things and places and people I want to fight that don't exactly match up with one decision at the moment. So, you know, that's the pros and cons list that I have sitting on my counter as far as what I want to do. So, I mean, but honest, when I know, you'll know.
Okay. Who's at the top of that list? Just curious, the bucket list.
There's places I want to fight. There's people I want to fight. There's certain amounts of fights I want to get in a certain amount of time, like all of that. So, I mean, it's a lot of weighing out. I mean, there's all these people I've definitely said I've wanted to fight in the past. So, you know, making good on those and seeing what happens, because I've always been curious what happens. And,
I wonder if those one of those people's name rhymes with Liss Lieberg.
Schmish Schmeiberg.
Yes, I wonder. Hot, cold?
Maybe.
All right. Okay, well, you have said a lot. I appreciate you being so forthright. I want to remind everyone that the 7-episode season 2 of Why We Fight, hosted by Kat Zingano, is on ESPN+. Executive producer is Ronda Rousey. How about this? You guys working together. How cool is that? And you can get that on the ESPN app, ESPN.com, ESPNplus.com. I suggest checking it out. It's great stuff. It's shot beautifully. The storytelling is amazing. And, you know, I'm sorry that it ended this way, but it sounds like you're in a good spot, that you're excited about the future. I'll just end on this if I can. At some point, would you like to fight again in the UFC? Or if you don't ever fight for the UFC again, are you at peace with that?
They are a huge part of where I am and why I am where I am today. And like, I'm super grateful. And if it ends up being something that in the future makes sense, like I'm not against it. Like I said, I'm very grateful for where I came from. But right now that's just not the chapter we're in. So, we'll see. But, as of right now, I gotta look forward. I can't look back, and, you know, we'll see what that ends up looking like.
Okay. Well, thank you for doing this, Kat. I really appreciate it. Thank you for coming on and talking about everything that's going on in your life, the good and the bad and, the exciting. And I'm looking forward to seeing where you end up. Please keep us posted. Okay.
All right. Absolutely.
All right. Good luck to you. There she is, Kat Zingano. Again, take a look at the, if you have ESPN Plus, the Why We Fight series that's on there now. All right. Before we get to our next guest, let me tell you about a couple of good people. First, let me tell you about our good friends over at Ancestry.com as you take a look now at some of Kat Zingano's notables. She's technically not on the phone, Corporate Jake, but I'll let it slide. It's okay. We're going to duke it out. He's very excited. He's going to Monday Night Football this evening. He's so excited about it. Did I tell you the Bills are 2-0 now? How about that? Best team in New York. Anyway, I love the good people over at Ancestry DNA. I've told you about them before. They're great. They support us. We support them. You spin in a little tube, you put it in a box, and voila, they tell you about everything in your life. Not just your life, but your history. I mean, have you ever wondered where your family comes from? You can discover more about them and learn about your story by combining the Ancestry DNA test with billions of historical family records. Ancestry DNA gives you so much more than just the places you're from. Ancestry connects you to the places in the world where your story started, using precise geographic detail and clear-cut historical insights. You can even trace your ancestors' journey over time, following how and why your family moved from place to place. And to amplify your results, you can start a free trial on Ancestry and build a tree so your ancestors become more than just a name. They've combined DNA results with over 100 million family trees and billions of records to give you more insight into your genealogy and origins. Only Ancestry can tell such a rich story with unique features that give you a more complete picture about a person, like events that shaped them, how they made a living, and what they excelled in. It's so easy to get started. Here's how you do it, okay? Go to Ancestry.com/MMA today for 20% off your Ancestry DNA kit. That's Ancestry.com/MMA for 20% off your Ancestry DNA kit. Again, Ancestry.com/MMA. Also, Troy TST, who's been completely ruining my life as of late, wants me to tell you all about our good friends over at Cheap Heat. As you may know, it was a huge weekend in the world of professional wrestling, and as much as I'd love to talk to you about it, I'll leave it to the experts, and that man is Peter Rosenberg. Gosh, am I blowing this. I mean, he writes it out like it's so natural, but like, I mean, I'm not going to remember this. Anyway, I could tell you this. See, I'm going to look at the camera and tell you that the Cheap Heat podcast is the best pro wrestling podcast there is on the ESPN family networks, and you can get it wherever you get your podcasts, Google, Apple, all that stuff and more. And by the way, if you're on Spotify, you can find Cheap Heat there as well, or wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, I am so excited about this. Back by popular demand. Not only is he an author, not only is he a chef, not only is he a TV host, not only is he a rapper, most importantly of all, he's the pride of Queens, New York, and he's a huge MMA fan, so he's back by popular demand because you all loved hearing from Bam Bam Baklava himself. You all loved hearing from Bronsolino. I can't believe he's back. A month and a half later, Action Bronson in the house. Is it true? Are you there? What's happening, my man?
I'm here. I'm standing on the corner of Avenue B and East 2nd Street. The East Village, drinking some wine, getting silly, having some good food.
I love this. This is incredible. Last time you were in your house.
It's not an amazing setup. I can tell my face is really strong up here, but
I know.
I'm going to have to do. I'm sorry.
Are you working right now?
I'm shooting FTD right now. Fuck That's Delicious is going down.
Right now.
I'm just standing on the corner with a bunch of East New York thugs smoking weed.
This is incredible.
So I just had some Sichuan food.
Uh-huh.
We're drinking some natural wine. It's a beautiful day in New York City.
Wait, so you just paused the filming of your show, F That's Delicious, to do my program? Is that accurate?
Nah, look, they're filming me talk to you.
Oh, my gosh. That's
this
amazing.
This guy's name is Jack.
Hello, Jack.
That's Jack. I made sure and asked Corporate Jake if we could film.
Oh, wow. Well done on your part. I appreciate you looking out for us. Well, Action, it's good to have you back on the program. How about this? Two times in 2 months for us? This is amazing. This could be like a thing that we're doing.
Hey, listen, man. You see where it's going.
I do see where it's going. Eventually, it's going to have to be face-to-face, matzo ball soup, the whole thing. You know, the Jewish New Year is coming up. So, you know, maybe around that time. I mean, there's a lot of stars aligning here.
I'm in the area, man. I told you I'll come scoop you up.
Okay, so
I'll come scoop you up in the Jeep Grand Cherokee. I'll put the sport package on so we go real fast on the way to go get some matzo ball soup. We'll get crazy.
All right. Well, speaking of getting crazy, I mean, I love watching your and reading your tweets on Fight Night. You're all over that. I saw on your Instagram a couple of weeks ago, you had two TVs showing the exact same thing. For some reason, I don't understand why, but why? Explain to us, why did you have two TVs showing the same thing side by side? Why could you possibly need that?
Let me tell you, we were streaming ESPN Plus on one situation, then we had regular ESPN on the other situation. We were in Philly. It was the first time they were using their brand new state-of-the-art apartment so we could watch these fights. And we had to work out the kinks, but we ended up watching. We watched Poirier and Khabib. All those amazing fights that happened beforehand, it was grand. It was gorgeous.
So you said on Saturday night that you want to see Poirier fight Connor. You weren't all that into the Gaethje Connor fight that I've been pushing these days. Why do you like Poirier versus Connor next as opposed to Gaethje versus Connor?
It's tricky over there. It's tricky. Okay. I mean, Poirier wants to get back in the ring. You know, he wants to get back in the octagon quickly. He doesn't want to live with that loss on his mouth claws. And I just feel like no matter what is going on elsewhere, Tony Khabib has to happen no matter what.
Yes.
We all know this, like you said. That has to happen. All the other fights will take care of themselves. People will start getting booked up. But I feel like that, we have to focus on that and everything else will fall into place.
I feel like a lot of people are turning on Conor these days. Like, they're tired of the tweets. They just want him to fight. Are you in that boat as well?
I'm not turning on him. I feel like he needs to just redeem himself. You got to fight. He hasn't won a fight. Even the last Diaz fight, I don't consider that a win because, I mean, I felt like Diaz won. So mm-hmm. He's lost three fights in a row.
That's true, yeah. And well, if you...
Four fights in a row.
Well,
two against Nate.
Okay.
Then Floyd. Then Khabib.
But he had Eddie Alvarez in there, too. Don't forget about that, in New York City.
I know, but he left. Eddie Alvarez left. Everyone seemed to, you know... Eddie Alvarez seemed to get beat up a lot the year before he left.
Well,
you know, they were taking him down. I don't know. I don't know what was up with him. Maybe he was on his. He wanted to leave, but I don't put that on the record.
Oh, really?
Even
wow.
Even though it was a good win.
Tough crowd. I love the way you say.
No disrespect. You know what I mean.
No, I know. I love the way you say Khabib. By the way, you say it in the very traditional way. A lot of people say Khabib.
It's
but
ethnic.
Khabib,
it's
right?
It's a KH. It's Khabib.
Yeah. That's right, because you're legit. So this was what you laid out for us. You said Felder, Cerrone, Khabib, Tony, of course, Gaethje gets winner, Dustin Connor. That was you playing matchmaker on Saturday. Felder, Cerrone, that's an interesting one. You know they're boys, right? They've trained together in the past.
I know they're boys, but he was boys with Gaethje also, but everyone just seems to be taking care of business. You can leave the friendship outside the octagon. When you guys are finished, you just reconvene like it was nothing. You know, that's what this is about. I tell my boys all the time, we need to start training and sparring and hitting each other more. Ain't nobody going to hit you like I'm going to hit you.
Right.
So you might as well get ready, you know, just in case someone tries to attack you in the street. You could use some Krav Maga or some Sistema that we learn together, you know?
Yeah. Wait, so are you saying you actually...
There's nothing better than to train with each other and to fight each other and then go have a sandwich.
You're actually saying you want to train? You want to actually train martial arts?
I mean, I've been training in my mind for years.
Okay.
I feel like I could do the moves.
Right.
It's just my body needs to talk. My body needs to do the talking. My brain could do the talking right now, but my body needs to move.
But this...
I need to get flexibility going.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm extremely strong, but the flexibility there is lacking. It's been years.
I mean, you remember Bam Bam Bigelow used to do the cartwheels in there. And remember,
I mean, I'm a cartwheel machine, to be honest with you. I do athletic things. I conquer athletic feats that some would deem amazing.
Well, and I feel like this is you kind of putting the offer out there to the world. If someone is out there that has a little bit of patience, Brontolino wants a piece. He wants to get his feet wet. Is that accurate? You want someone to come and teach you the right way, not just try to, you know, push you very quickly. You got to get your feet wet. You got to move into it slowly. Fair?
Well, I went to Matt Serra's training facility out in Long Island, and he's been inviting me back ever since, but it's really far away from where I'm at, so I just like to get high a lot. You know, I like to watch the fights and imagine that I'm doing these things.
Okay.
But in reality, I'd like to do these things in my life.
Yes, I would love to see that.
I need discipline. I need the things that martial arts brings.
Wow, okay. I appreciate you being so open about this. Have you come to this conclusion recently?
No, it's always been. I used to do a lot of karate. I used to do karate when I was young. I used to do taekwondo, you know. I used to do a lot of locker room wrestling,
okay.
Fucking around, playing football and hitting people and hitting them with hockey sticks and shit. You know, I'm trying to do some different type of training these days.
Okay. Right now, considering like all the sports that are out there, because I know you're a big sports fan, we've talked about this. Do you feel like MMA is your favorite? Like, is it the one that's satisfying your
100%.
Hunger? 100%. Really?
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I'm a big baseball person. Football, my team, it's the Jets. It's fucking, it's an absolute travesty and a joke at this point. my quarterback has mononucleosis like he was fucking 13 years old with his first kiss on the roller skating rink. I don't know what the hell to say anymore. I don't know what to do anymore. I'm out of my mind, so I might as well just do this. And honestly, MMA is on every week. It feeds my passion for manly situations that you don't get in the streets all the time. You know, I like competition. I like seeing mano-a-mano competition.
Now, what about, can I ask you about this Michelle Pajeda guy who was flipping all over the place? What do you think of that?
Man,
disgrace?
Michelle Pajeda is a crazy guy. Listen, at the end of the day, all those moves are cool and all, but like you said, he missed weight.
Yeah.
He's flipping all over the place. I feel if he would have hit that backflip into the double foot stomp on the stomach, it would have been over. But that's a fucking crazy move to hit. You can't rely on that every time. And Connelly took care of business. He, you know, like you said, he goes out on his shield. He's a grinder. And he fucking took him. He took him to school right there.
Isn't that amazing? Some pale Canadian guy who works for EA Sports just like waltzes in there in front of 20,000 people and beats this guy who was probably weighing 30 pounds more than him. Like, what other sport do you get this kind of drama? It's incredible.
It was pretty much fitting. I love Vancouver, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the best weed, some of the best hash in the world.
Oh, yeah. By the way, have you ever been interviewed by Nardwar?
Absolutely.
Oh, my
2013,
God.
2013, that's my guy, the human serviette.
Yes. I need to see that.
Like absolute shit, though. He doesn't wear deodorant. He smelled like garbage. And we were in Austin, Texas, so I was like, I would almost fucking pass out. But I love him.
Did he break out all the old like mementos and stuff and all that stuff?
It was early on, so there wasn't as many mementos to find.
Okay.
But he had some pretty mind-blowing stuff. I bet you if we did one now, he'd definitely make me throw water on him to make sure he's not a snitch, make sure he's not wired.
What do you mean? What are you trying to say?
I don't know. He's working for the feds.
Nardwar?
Nah, I'm just fucking with you. He's a great guy. He's
Oh my gosh, that just blew my mind for a second. Oh, we lost action.
Sorry, my man was calling me.
Oh,
my
okay.
Man was calling me. We're talking about doing an ice cream collaboration. I want to do the old school WWF bars with my face on it, with my body reaching up towards the stars.
Really? Legit?
Yes. Legit. That's I don't fucking play games. When I say I want to do it, I go and do it.
Oh my gosh. So who was just calling you?
This dude named Nicholas Morgenstern, he has a delicious spot down on the Lower East Side called Morgenstern's. I'm going to have to charge him for this.
Okay. Do we have a couple more minutes? I know you're very busy. Can I ask you about a couple more things?
No, of course.
Oh, okay.
I want to talk about the heavyweight fights. How the fuck did we get two heavyweight competitions that ended in the same bullshit?
Which ones are you talking about?
We're talking about Czech Congo and Vader and fucking
Todd Duffy.
My guy Duffy. Yeah. What the hell happened to him? It was a phantom eye poke. And he's telling the fucking ref that he's seeing double. What do you think is going to happen? You're supposed to tell him you can see fine immediately.
Well, can I tell you something right now? I'm a little down on Todd Duffy right now because I feel like I've had his back.
I know you are. So I heard you were up on him. You were happy about his comeback.
Yeah, he just bailed
he
on my show.
He let everyone down.
He bailed on my show today.
He let a lot of people down.
He was supposed to be on the show and he bailed. How about that?
You see, that's what happens. You know, you have to face the medicine. You have to face the music.
Did it feel like his body? This is why I think he's getting criticism. He didn't seem to be bothered by the fact that the fight was called off. It seemed like he almost was trying to tell the ref with his eyes, "I want out."
Yep.
You know what I mean? He didn't seem upset over it.
That's what it looked like to me. I mean, but it was kind of confusing because he was landing heavy shots.
Yeah,
he was landing the more powerful shots. He dropped them twice. I really didn't understand the reasoning he wanted out. In my opinion, I saw Czech Congo. There was a little poke there, but that trauma to the eye came from a punch.
Right.
100%. That trauma came from a punch, and I just don't like when you're trying to, you know, don't weasel your way out of something. If it's something for real, then it's for real, but don't fucking try and get a no decision or no contest for nothing, you know?
Yeah, so you're even watching those Bellator fights now, huh? You're that hardcore.
I'm watching it all.
Everything.
I'm watching any men fight, any women fight, whatever. I love it.
Now, this is the one I'm dying to ask you about. 305.
Tell me.
209, Stockton, Miami, East Coast, West Coast.
You know I'll be there.
What do you think? The world's most famous arena.
I'm telling you right now.
Yes.
I'm having a baby very close to that date.
Okay.
I told my lady we go in no matter what. She's agreed. And if we have the baby in the garden, then we have the baby in the garden.
That's it. No problem. She's okay with that.
She's 100% in.
Wow. That's how much you want to be there. You have to. It's not good enough to watch this on TV, on your phone. You have to be there in person.
No. When fights like this are in Madison Square Garden, pardon me. Hold on.
Let's go. All right. What's going on here?
We got some situations going on over here.
Well, there's New York's finest.
Of course they're stopping on the corner.
Come on, guys.
Hold on a second.
All right.
What's up?
What's
You're doing a hell of a job, fellas.
This is amazing. This is my favorite interview ever.
Yeah, so.
Go ahead.
Like I said, we're having the baby at the garden no matter what.
Now, why do you feel like you need
to be
there?
It's
going
to be an amazing fight. You know I'm not going to choose a winner.
Come on.
You know I can't do that. I'm here to enjoy that match. Like I said, I've loved Nate Diaz for a very long time, and I'll leave it at that. Jorge Masvidal is a man's man. So I just can't wait. I can't wait for this.
But you're not going to pick a side?
No, 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 no. I call it down the middle. I'm Bill Alfonso. Right down the middle.
Nice little ECW reference there. But in your heart, are you rooting for someone or you're just watching the fight? That's it.
In my heart of hearts, I'm happy. I'm happy either way because I just want New York to get that massive fight situation back. The garden is a special place, and it needs to be treated so.
What's going on there? Is there a fire right on the block?
Hold on. There's some fucking crazy shit going on.
Tell us. Break it down for us. This is a great.
There's like five fire trucks going down Avenue B. Who knows? Some fucking crackhead probably lit himself on fire.
What about the BMF title? You like this idea?
I love it. I'll make the belt. I have an old belt from the 1900s.
Oh, really?
My grandfather gave me a belt.
How do you
I'll make it.
How do you get the belt?
I don't know how we get it. I don't have the backstory on that, but I told you we were big bare knuckle fans.
Okay. Wow. All right. Well, I feel like you're very hectic over there, so I'm going to let you go, Action. But this has been a lot of fun, man.
I just passed. It's all good.
Oh, yeah? I don't want to
go all day. Yeah, they're out of here. They're going down Houston right now.
And are you done? Like, what are you exactly filming right now?
I'm filming Fuck That's Delicious Season 4.
Yeah.
That should be out very soon. We're at a beautiful wine store called Discovery Wines. You could get all the great natural stuff right there. We did a little East Village crawl where we got a bunch of Sichuan food, got some waffles and dinghies, got all kinds of craziness from around the neighborhood, brought it back to the wine shop and just got a little twisty, you know? Early afternoon.
Any canafe, any manouche, any sambusek?
Well, this is for right after. That's the dessert portion of the show.
Oh, okay.
You know, right now is the savory portion. You know, having desserts in the afternoon is a little bit much.
Yeah, I hear you.
Even though I'm not against it, of course, but it's a bit much.
And by the way, speaking of a bit much, what do you think of this whole Colby Covington, Kamaru Usman drama? How do you feel about that? Should they move on or should they make the fight?
To be honest with you, it's really not even that interesting at this point.
Oh, it's not.
Yeah, I mean, it needs to happen, but you're kind of losing people with the bullshit.
Yeah.
Just make the fight, make it happen. You know, you want more money, go fucking fight it and make it more. That's what everyone has to do. Make more money, you gotta fucking perform.
Isn't it crazy that he's fighting with Masvidal? He's fighting with Poirier at ATT. Like, there's all kinds of drama there.
Nah, it's not good when you have a problem with your friends.
Yeah.
That Amen. Means that you're a bad person. Once all your friends start hating you, you're a bad person.
I like your hat, by the way.
That's the Postal Service, man. We shout to them every day. Thank you very much for your services.
Action, you're the man. I love you. It's so great
much
having
love,
you on.
Much love, Ariel. You're the best.
Let's do this again. And next time in person, okay? I know I keep saying that, but I really want to do it.
I'm serious. I'll make that hour drive.
Okay.
I'll come through in the M6 from 87. We'll go drive around Bristol. We'll pick up whoever.
Oh, my God. That would be incredible.
Let's go.
All right. It's a date. Thank you, Action. You're the man.
Much love.
Much love to you.
Be safe, everybody. Peace out.
There he is, the one and only Bam Bam Baklava himself, Bronsolino. huge MMA fan, host, rapper, chef, MMA connoisseur. How do you not love that guy? I could do that. I could do that every week. I could do that every month. He's just so much fun. I was listening to a podcast. I don't remember which one he was on. I think it was, oh God, it was like some kind of, gosh, I'm sorry. I can't remember it. Anyway, just listening to his voice puts me at ease. I mean, look at that guy. Loving life. So calm, cool, collected, chilling, no problems, not a worry in the world. A lot of fun. Thank you very much, Tim, for doing that. He doesn't have to do it. I really appreciate it. Okay. That's been one of my favorite developments of 2019 on this program. My friendship with Action Bronson. Never saw that coming. All right. Let's turn our attention now to this weekend. The UFC is back in Ciudad de Mexico. I think I'm saying that correct. Anyway, it's the Mexico City Arena in Mexico. They've had numerous events there, UFC 180, UFC 188, some massive moments. And they're coming back this time with El Pantera. Yair Rodriguez headlining his first UFC Mexico event. We haven't seen Yair in around 10 months since his crazy knockout of one Korean Zombie. But they are not giving him an easy fight. Waiting for him in Mexico already. He's been there for several weeks. His little heathen, Jeremy Stevens. And there he is, right over there, joining us via the magic of Skype. Mr. Jeremy Stevens, how are you?
Fantastic. Está bien.
Yes. What does that mean? Is everything okay?
Everything's good.
Everything's good.
Todo bien.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, I knew that.
Yes, sir.
How long have you actually been in Mexico for?
It's like five and a half weeks. Been out here training in Zacatecas.
Now, why so long? Why? I mean, by the end, it'll be like six weeks or so. That's a long time being away from your family. Why did you go out so early?
For one, I just wanted to get the experience, you know, just put myself in an uncomfortable position. That's where you find a little bit more in deeper in the soul when you put yourself in uncomfortable positions like that. Also, a long time ago, I watched Verdum beat the shit out of Cain Velasquez, and Cain Velasquez is a cardio king. And within that fight, he gassed out within the second round, I believe it was, and he got choked the fuck out. So, you know, watching Kane, who was a cardio machine, get choked out like that, you know, and Verdum put in 2 months out and put himself in the mountains and go in there and perform like that, you know, it's experience, man. Preparation. Preparation's key.
So when you first got there, what was it like? Because obviously we've heard about the altitude and how it affects the lungs. It makes you very tired. Was it a shock to the system?
Yeah, I'd say probably 3 days I really felt it. Right when I got here, I left probably 1 a.m. in Tijuana. I got here 6 in the morning. I ate some breakfast, and I went on a 90-minute run. And the first probably 2-3 days were really hard on the lungs. And the recovery was a little bit different in the legs. You know, you woke up, I felt like the filero, which is like knives, were stabbing me in my feet. And, you know, once I got here, I had had a guy take care of me. His name's Hector Galvez. We call him Theo, which is like uncle. He's my new uncle here. He's been taking care of us and everything down here in Zacatecas. I started getting recovery and doing things different because the recovery was a lot different because no oxygen was hitting the body as it would back in the States. You know, we're spoiled there in Disneylandia.
This area that you're in, how far away is it from Mexico City?
I wouldn't know. The plane rides, it's probably like maybe, I don't know, I think it's like an 8-hour drive, I believe. I think Macio and them guys are saying that it's like an 8-hour drive. They're going to drive over there. Plane rides like an hour and a half.
Okay.
So it's quite a bit of ways, but this place is a high altitude. It's a beautiful city. You know, no one told me how beautiful Zacatecas was really going to be. It's got a lot of rich history here in fighting and Pancho Villa and just so much like conquistadors coming over here trying to take over. And this place has fighting in their blood, and the people here are just excellent. They open us up with open arms. The mayor, which they call like the presidente of Zacatecas, has just opened the doors for everything, rehabs to training centers. They move mountains for us, and it's incredible. It's a great experience.
And why did you choose there in particular? Like, why did you decide to do the rest of your camp there?
High altitude, and you know, Techo knows these guys out here. They know the gyms. It's a great place. It's a beautiful place. You know, I didn't really choose. You know, I just trust my coaches. They were going to put me in the right area. And other than that, I just put in work, bro. You know, I work my ass off. I work hard. I've been running mountains. I've been running the streets. I put myself amongst the people. I've been doing seminars with little kids. Meanwhile, while training, running late at night, swimming. I mean, fuck, man. I've been doing it all, bro. I mean, I love it. You know, I've enjoyed every moment down here. It's been amazing. You know, and it's been uncomfortable as well. You know, but that's where I get the most value. Is being uncomfortable. I like this. I wanted to fight here. You know, moment they called me and said Mexico, and I figured around this time, you know, I have a little bit of Mexican blood, you know, that they'd want to put me on this card because I fight like 100% Mexican. You know, I fight with passion. I fight with raw heart. And, you know, I went and was, I had a meeting with my new management, Bellingy Group. That's where I saw Tony Ferguson, and I knew he trained in high altitude. I was talking to him, talking about going to Big Bear, but then I realized Big Bear is not nowhere near as high as here. So I went up there, trained with him a little bit, and got some experience, got some great knowledge from him, and came down here and submerged myself amongst the people and put myself in an uncomfortable position. And I love it. You know, it's away from home. It's away from my kids. I feel like a savage dog running these streets, bro. I'm hungry. I'm ready to go, and I'm ready to go kill a chamaco.
I absolutely love it. I just wanted to ask a couple of follow-ups there. So the Mexican roots that you have, like your family, what could you tell us about that? What, like, which part of your family is from there? Because I always knew you had ties to that region, but I wasn't quite sure what it was.
Yeah, my dad is Mexican. His mom is a Gomez. My grandma's Rosie Gomez. They're from Michoacán. Zaragoza is where my family's from. My wife is actually 100% Mexican. I've been down to her rancho, and where her family's from is Nayarit, Los Pilas, and Chilapa. And I've experienced and submerged myself down in those areas. You know, I love coming to Mexico. It's great people, beautiful people, hardworking people, so giving, so loving. And the country is just truly amazing. So, you know, my daughters are Mexican. So, you know, I have deep roots in the Mexican game. I don't speak 100% fluent Spanish, but when you watch me fight, you know where my quarter zone stays at, baby, and that's here in Mexico.
And when you were offered Yair in particular, like an opportunity to fight probably the most decorated Mexican-born fighter in UFC history, because, of course, Cain has ties, wasn't born there, so if we want to be technical, Yair, born in Mexico, Chihuahua, Mexico, and him coming back, like, what did you think of this opportunity that they were giving you?
Well, I'm going to treat him like a Chihuahua dog, and I'm going to kick him clear across the fucking other side of the land, so... I don't care, man. You know, you can have a whole country behind him. It's not going to save him when it comes down to fight, because I know what I'm fighting for, and that's my Mexican family back home. I'm here to do one thing, and that's win and beat your ass and go home and take care of my family. That's what I do.
Training with Tony Ferguson, what was that experience like? You don't see him often training with other guys and letting other people into his world. He's unorthodox, right? Based on what we see online, what was it like actually being in there with him?
I think a lot of people get Tony Ferguson a little bit different. You know, they may judge him or take after him. Man, the dude's actually a really giving, probably most compassionate, you know, sharing, caring type of dude. His knowledge in fighting is just truly amazing. You know, I think a lot of people forget. You know, I'm up there with like the Masvidals, the Diaz, bro. I've been fighting since I was 16 years old. I got 17 years in the game. And I've been putting in a lot of fucking work, you know, and training with a guy like Tony Ferguson, who's one of the top in the world, who's more than deserving of a title shot, has so much knowledge, experience of beating guys' asses. It was incredible. We trained probably 6.5 hours straight, and then we would take a little break. We'd watch Rocky IV, and then we went on midnight runs, 1 a.m. You know, his training is unorthodox, but I don't think a lot of people really know how I train as well. I train very hard. I keep up. And, you know, I was in great shape 5 weeks ago, you know, and for Tony Ferguson to say that you're in phenomenal shape, and that was five and a half, 6 weeks ago, you know, that's quite a compliment. I imagine he doesn't give that out too often, and it was an incredible experience. I actually can't wait to go back and help him train for his upcoming fight, go on them runs and do that 6.5, 7 hours Floyd Mayweather type training. you know, it's champ shit. You know, it truly is. The guy's incredible. He's smart. It's not just barbaric work. The guy trains with extreme intelligence, and that's where I got a lot of learning from.
So the last time we saw you, of course, was back in March against Zabit, and I think everyone felt like, okay, that was going to be the big step for Zabit. He was going to steamroll through you and take that big step in his career, but it was a tough fight. Obviously, you came to fight. No one, you know, who's watched you for years was surprised by this. What lessons, if any, did you learn from that experience being in there with a guy like Zabit, whose style, you know, one could say, you know, just based on his flexibility and the fact that he throws so many different looks at you, somewhat, you know, similar to that of Yair's, which you will probably see on Saturday?
Yes, sir. Very, very good point, Ariel. You know, I've been in there with a guy who I feel like has a little bit more pop on his shit, and he definitely has better wrestling. I felt like I won that fight. You know, I think I won. I believe and know that I won the first and the third. The experience, what I learned was, you know, once he kicked me in the nuts, it was a very hard shot. And normally, like, I like to blow that shit off and keep the pressure because I knew I can break the kid, which, you know, in the third round, he's looking up at the clock, gassing, looking for air and looking for ways out. And within that rest, he took advantage and was trying to do some explosive movements toward the end of the first round, which I could see how the judges maybe looked in awe of, like, oh, he stole the round. So that was a little bit of a learning lesson. I should have just went out and just fucking went crazy ape shit on him and stole the round. So that was a good experience. And another thing, which is why I went up and trained with Tony Ferguson, was footwork. You know, I've been losing these, like, little decisions. You know, no one's ever taken the fucking dog or my heart or ever just toss me around. You know, I just lose these little technical bullshit, like, weasel-ass decisions because these guys just don't really want to fucking get into a fight with me, and I don't blame them. So what do I do? How do I beat these guys? How do I become one of the best in the world, which is, like, my ultimate goal? Because I know I can be champion. I know I can knock any of these guys out. I can break their legs. I can break their heart. And you saw Zabit gassing and looking up at the clock. I don't gas. You know, and then this kid's got to go in five rounds with me. So what do I do? And I go up and train with Tony Ferguson. He goes, hey, your footwork sucks. I was like, sweet, show me how to fucking get better. And that's exactly what we did. I worked out a lot of footwork. I got a lot of details from him. And, you know, my killer instinct, my passion, my savage dog, warrior type, Aztec spirit is still there. You know, and now I'm hungry. Now I'm coming off losses. My back's against the wall. And I'm coming against a young kid who thinks he's from a new era. Like, what the fuck are you going to show me? Or think that you're going to do to me that I haven't seen, bro? You know, I went and trained with the best. I am the best. I've fought in the best. You know, you ain't going to show me shit. The only thing you're going to show is the world that you're going to be sleeping on the fucking canvas. And I can't wait to show it. I'm pissed off. I'm ready to go. I'm a lot smarter. I'm a lot better. And that's how I keep showing up. If you think I'm an old dog from an old era, well, ask yourself, how do I keep coming back and getting multiple knockouts with my multiple different limbs? You know, my mindset, my savageness, you know, my just aggression and willingness to just always adapt, overcome, and get fucking better and keep coming back and putting these young kids to sleep. And that's what's going to happen come Saturday night, and I can't wait. I'm ready to put on a show for everybody.
Yes. Sometimes you hear that from people. I can't wait. I'm excited. I feel it. Like, I feel this emanating from the screen. This does not seem like empty talk coming from you, Jeremy. It's actually giving me goosebumps listening to you. I wanted to ask you about something we talked about around a year ago. You were very open about, you know, things you were dealing with in your life and trying to get back on track. I really appreciated how honest you were, and I just want to know how things are going. How are you feeling? Do you feel like you're in a better place mentally and with your family as well?
Oh, yeah. You know, there's always those things. You know, you're always going to go through life with your ups and downs. You know, I heard you and Dominic have an incredible story. You know, when, you know, Dana and everybody kicked you out of the UFC, you know, it's like, man, where do I go? What do I do? You know, people are losing their jobs, you know, especially down here in this country. Man, you look around, bro, it's crazy down here, you know, and people go through some hardships, you know, and there's always going to be that voice in the back of their head that's like, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that, you know, and you just got to tell that voice, shut the fuck up and turn up that small voice that says, yes, you can do it, yes, you can, and keep going, keep striving. And that's why I'm here. That's why I continue to be here. That's why I continue to be the top guy in the world and put on these shows and keep making main events and keep making hit after hit. And savagely, too. Just highlights that people are scared to play on TV because it's just too scary, you know. And I thrive in that type of situations. You know, where I come from, you know, I wasn't supposed to make it. But the fact that I'm still here just gives me that much more motivation to just keep on going, keep thriving, and keep being an inspiration. You know, I don't look at myself as like, oh, I'm some key inspiration to people. If I inspire people, awesome. You know, if you want to reach out to me and you need some help, which multiple people did, and there were some fellow UFC fighters who actually reached out to me, and I won't mention any of their names, but, you know, I pointed them in the right direction, and that's the key, you know. Just today I read that Khabib Nurmagomedov sold a shirt for $100,000 and invested in Dustin Poirier's program that's going to $100,000 over there in Uganda is just going to save tremendous lives. And that's the shit I fight for, because you know what? I grew up like that. I grew up poor. I grew up rough. And that's why I really fight. That's my purpose, is to really help people and be an example. You know, I know I cuss and I'm crazy and people think that I'm mean and I look rough and I'm just some crazy killer. Well, come and get to talk to me, come get to know me, and come get to experience my experience in life and how I've overcome. You know, looking like a guy like David Goggins, you know, I can relate to that. And that's my purpose. That's why I keep pushing forward. And, you know, if I inspire people along the way, that's great.
You mentioned being, quote unquote, pissed off. Like, do you feel like you're being served up to Yair in his country, his big return fight after that crazy knockout against Korean Zombie? Like, you're the guy, you're the stepping stone, you're the vet, you just, you know, lost to Zabit in this super close fight. Like, does it annoy you that you're being put in this position, but in the same token, like, kind of motivate you as well? Do you use that as motivation?
No, I'm just not, like, pissed off. Like, I want to win. I'm here to win. You know, I'm not mad or anything. This is an opportunity for me to go and fuck some kid up right in his own country, right in front of his mom and dad. I mean, that's a great opportunity, man, for me to make money and go back and serve my family. And that's all I care about. I don't care what people are things. You know, they're putting their limiting beliefs on what they really think this is or what this is. And I'm in some other country. You know, I've been to Brazil before and knocked a dude straight out cold within seconds. And no one cheered for me. Do you think I give a shit? I was so happy because I know what I'm fighting for. And that's really all that matters to me. I know what my purpose is. I know what I'm fighting for. And that's me and my family. And that's all that I really care about.
The last win that you had was February of 2018. How much are you missing that feeling of getting your hand raised?
Man, I picture it. I dream about it. I meditate all the time. And, you know, come Saturday night, my hand will be raised. I'm here to do one thing, and that's win. And that's exactly what's going to happen, and I can't wait. It's going to be a beautiful performance. And I feel like, you know, a lot of people say they're in the best shape ever, but you guys are going to see it. And like you said earlier, Ariel, you're going to feel it.
All right. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much for doing this, Jeremy. I really appreciate it. Good luck to you on Saturday. Huge fight in Mexico. What a scene that's going to be for you going up against their guy, Yair Rodriguez, this Saturday on ESPN+. Thank you for doing this, my man. All the best to you.
Arrow, you're the fucking man. Thanks for the opportunity to be on here. And thank you guys tuning in. Maybe don't blink.
I appreciate it very much. There he is, Jeremy Stephens, joining us from Mexico. And this Saturday, he meets Yair Rodriguez in the main event of UFC Fight Night Mexico City. That begins, by the way, the main card begins at 8 p.m. Eastern. Other fights of note on the main card, Carla Esparza against Alexa Grasso. So Grasso getting an opportunity to fight back in Mexico as well. Askar Askarov against Brandon Moreno. Irene Aldana, as you can imagine, a lot of Mexican-born fighters on the card against Vanessa Mello. And some other names of note, Paul Craig fighting on the prelims, which begin at 5 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. Betch Kohea against Sejara Eubanks, interesting fight. But I'll tell you the fight, other than the main event, that I'm most looking forward to. Tyson Nam against Sergio Pettis. Tyson Nam has been fighting for, I think, approximately 13 years. I think he's fought in his 28 pro fights. I counted this last night. I think he's fought in 16 different promotions. And it's just amazing that this guy is getting this opportunity on such short notice. He's a late replacement here, but finally getting an opportunity to fight in the UFC. I mean, just look at some of these names that he's fought for, some promotions. Very quickly here, Icon Sport, Elite XC, Carnage at the Creek, King of the Cage, Arena Rumble, Sport Fight, Galaxy MMA, what else? Square Ring Promotions, Shudo, World Series of Fighting, WCFC, XFC, Destiny MMA, Fight Nights Global, X1, I mean, he has been everywhere. 18-9-1. He's won his last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. One draw in between there. What a run for Tyson Nam. He's getting an opportunity to fight Sergio Pettis. That's on the prelims this Saturday. All right. One more guest. I wanted to talk to someone who's actually still in Vancouver. I don't know if you've seen this, but Austin Hubbard, who had a victory on Saturday, posted a gruesome photo on his Instagram. He's dealing with something right now called compartment syndrome. And according to this online source that I'm looking at right now, orthoinfo.org, this is the picture. I mean, that is his leg. That is Austin Hubbard's leg, who fought in the UFC and won on Saturday. Compartment syndrome is a painful condition that occurs when pressure within the muscles builds to dangerous levels. This pressure can decrease blood flow, which prevents nourishment and oxygen from reaching nerve and muscle cells. It can be either acute or chronic. Well, Curtis Blades is a good friend and training partner of Austin Hubbard's. He's in Vancouver at the hospital right now with Austin, staying back with him, which is an amazingly kind thing. And he's kind enough to be joining us from the hospital. I just wanted to get an update on how Austin is doing. Curtis, are you there?
Yeah, man, I'm here.
How is Austin doing this? And thank you very much, by the way, for joining us. I really appreciate it, especially on short notice.
No problem, man. Austin, he's in good spirits right now. He's actually about to go into the OR in like less than an hour. They're going to look at, because they open him up, like you just mentioned, had to relieve that pressure. And he still has an open wound, and they're draining out like all the blood and all, like, it's not just blood. It's also, I guess when the muscles have that type of bruising, it starts to release some type of toxin that you have to remove. So they're draining all that. And, then the doctors are going to look at the swelling, and if he's good enough today, they can stitch him up or give him a skin graft. If not, he has to wait another couple of days, and then we'll go back in there and, you know, take another look at it. But worst case scenario, we're here until Wednesday. Best case scenario, I mean, worst case scenario, we're here till Friday. Best case scenario, we're here till Wednesday.
And so he has this hard-fought victory on Saturday. He picks up his first UFC win. He's very excited. At what point did you guys realize that something was not going right, that he was sick?
That was hard to tell, because, you know, he's very, very tough, and he doesn't really like to complain about, like, anything. So we knew he was hurting because his leg was pretty bruised and pretty swollen, but like, he just had a fight, so that's normal. We all walk out of the cage a little limp or whatever, but we left early because he was the very first fight of the night. So we got back to our hotel and we were watching the rest of the card, and then we saw Gaethje win. We were all, me and my coaches and Austin, we were all happy about that. And then about 10 to 15 minutes after that, Austin's like, my leg's really hurting, man. I gotta go upstairs. And when he says that, I'm like, okay, it must be really, really hurting. So my coaches, they both helped him up, and they were holding him, and they were escorting him into the elevator. And I was paying the tab, and then like 2 minutes later, one of the waitresses runs up on me. She's like, yo, your friend, he's passed on the elevator.
Whoa.
I guess because he collapsed in my coach's arms, but they were holding him, and they placed him down on the ground, and we got a hold of the ambulance, and they were there within, like, 10 minutes. We're actually, the hotel we're staying at is, like, a block and a half away from the Richmond Hospital where he's staying at. So we lucked out there. They were able to get to him pretty fast and get him in the operating room, and it was pretty scary, but thankfully, everything was able to be taken care of in a timely manner, and we're just expecting him to make a full recovery now.
Wow, and so he's had one surgery already.
Yeah, he had to do that to relieve the pressure, because his leg was, it's like when you go to the grocery store and you pick up a watermelon, and like you can feel how tight it is. That's how his upper leg felt. It was hard.
Yeah, we're looking at the video right now, courtesy of your Instagram. He appears to be in good spirits, right? Like he's awake and fully aware of what's going on here, right?
Yeah, he's awake. I mean, last night he was he was in and out because they gave him a morphine drip, so it makes you pretty drowsy. But yeah, today he's pretty clear at it.
And so they're draining blood into this machine?
Yeah, it's some type of vacuum, and it's supposed to vacuum out like all the bad stuff. I don't know exactly what the bad stuff is. I know it's bad,
right?
Bad stuff in his leg.
And this was as a result of leg kicks that he suffered in the fight?
Yeah, it was the leg kicks, but it wasn't anything special about the leg kicks. I've seen Austin eat like a lot more leg kicks. I think they were just like, it's the freak accident. Because I don't know if you know, but this was like the first case of a compartment syndrome in the U.S. being over like 20 years.
Wow.
This isn't like a normal thing. It's really rare.
And by the way, what's up? I also saw that video you posted of the hospital with like the 1985 television. What's going on with the hospitals there in Vancouver? Are they a little outdated?
No. I think just a little bit. I mean, that TV was a shock. I was like, yo, we gotta get this man an iPad or something.
And so the surgery is scheduled for an hour. If everything goes well with the surgery, will that be the last one, or regardless, are there more surgeries in sight here?
Well, no, if everything goes well today, this is it.
Okay.
They stitch him up, or they give him a skin graft, and then, well, I mean, he shouldn't need another surgery, but obviously, when we do get out of here, we're going to go to Chicago. So he lives a couple hours away from Chicago. I'm from Chicago originally. So we were both originally planning on going home, and then we were going to drive back to Illinois, but that's not going to happen now. We're going to get a flight straight to Chicago, and I think his parents are going to drive up from his hometown and they'll meet him at the hospital. I'm going to help him get into the hospital, and then once his parents get there, I'll take off. I'll go back to my dad's house, and I'll be periodically like checking in on him.
And so are you staying with him in Vancouver until he leaves?
Yeah.
Wow. Good for you, man. That's really kind of you. You're a great friend. And I know you're not a doctor, so I don't want to put you in a tough spot, but is there any chance that like his career is in jeopardy here because of this?
No, I don't believe so. Originally we all were like, you know, we were in panic mode. We were thinking the worst case scenario, but I believe the doctors called it in time, but the only way to really, really to know if he's going to have damages, they got to give it a couple weeks after they stitch him up or whatever. Then they'll be able to somehow, I guess they can test your muscles. They give you some type of electroshock therapy, and that's how they gauge if you have damage to your muscles or not. So we won't be able to tell that like 100%, at least another couple weeks.
Well, I wish him the best, man. It's scary. I mean, when I saw that video last night from your Instagram and then the photo on his page, it was shocking to see. As you mentioned, that's the first, according to the UFC doctors, the first compartment syndrome incident that they've ever seen in 25 years of UFC fights. So that is just mind blowing. And by the way, I want to give you a congratulations on your great performance just last weekend in Abu Dhabi. We talked about it on the show, just how amazing and vicious and scary your ground and pound is. And that was on full display. And I was so impressed with your cardio. Everyone was complaining about the air and, you know, the humidity and how hot it was. It seemed like you can go another five rounds of doing just that. And so I just wanted to congratulate you on that and ask you how the experience was overall in Abu Dhabi. Did you enjoy fighting over there?
Oh yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. And yeah, Abu Dhabi was a great experience. That's one of the reasons I really don't have a problem doing international cards, because it's an opportunity to go experience a different culture, a different part of the world. And these are opportunities I probably wouldn't have if it weren't due to me being in the UFC, because I doubt I ever would have gone to Abu Dhabi or Australia or Croatia or Beijing without that. So I always appreciate the opportunity to go explore another place.
Do you know who you want next yet?
Yeah, we have an idea. We, me and my coaches and my management, and we all agreed that it only makes sense the winner of Junior versus Alexander Volkov on November 9th.
Okay.
We like the winner of that.
That's the fight that's happening in Moscow in a little less than 2 months. So you want the winner of that. Are you hoping that one guy wins over the other? Is one particular fight more of interest to you?
Yeah, I think not to say Alexander isn't an amazing mixed martial artist, but I don't think his name carries the same weight that Junior does. And if Junior is coming off a highlight victory and then I beat him, it gives me a little more juice than if I beat Alexander off of a victory over Junior. So, I mean, I would fight either one of them. Like, whoever wins is who I want. But, yeah, if you're asking me who would I prefer, Junior.
Okay. Maybe you'll go. Will you go to that fight? Will you be there cage side to get a first-hand look at the fight itself? Or is that a little too far just for something like that?
Yeah, I think that's a little too far.
Okay. Oh, you were just talking about how you like the international trips.
Yeah, but I mean, it also helps when I'm getting paid for it.
Right. That is true. That is absolutely true. All right. I don't want to take you away from your friend. If you can, please send Austin our best. Hopefully everything goes okay with the surgery coming up in just a few minutes time. And hopefully you guys can get out of there. I hope they're treating you nicely in Vancouver. The Canadian people, known to be some of the nicer people on this planet, if I do say so myself. But hopefully everything goes well for you guys and you can get back home and he'll make a speedy recovery. And good on you for staying with him this whole time, Curtis. That's really cool to see. Thank you for doing this on such short notice.
No problem, man. It's always an honor to be on your show, and we appreciate the positive vibes.
Thank you. All the best. There he is, Curtis Blades, joining us from Vancouver. And just talking to Curtis Blades moments ago, and now talking to Corporate Jake. Look at this. I was reading about this before we got him on. So this is according to another website. What's the source here? From the Mayo Clinic. Compartment syndrome, a painful and dangerous condition caused by pressure buildup from internal bleeding or swelling of tissues. Treatable by a medical professional, requires a medical diagnosis, critical, needs emergency care. The pressure decreases blood flow, depriving muscles and nerves of needed nourishment. Symptoms may include severe pain, sensation of pins and needles, and weakness of the affected area. For severe cases of compartment syndrome, emergency surgery is needed. So it sounded like that was Austin Hubbard's situation. Symptoms may include severe pain, sensation of pins and needles, and weakness of the affected area. The surgery is called a... Should I even attempt this? Fasciotomy? I don't know. Tomy. Fasciotomy. I totally botched that. Anyway, we wish Austin the best, and we appreciate Curtis for coming on such short notice. All right, a couple of updates. Todd Duffy said he couldn't join us. In the end, he said, this is what he said. Let me just read. You know how I feel about people canceling at the last minute. I'm just going to be quiet. This is what he said. I got two doctor's appointments. Let's see how it plays out. I need to tell the reality of the story. Don't kid yourself. Next Monday, if this doesn't work. And it didn't. And then I said, we can work around your schedule. Didn't seem to work. You got some info. You saw the two eye pokes. You heard I've had two surgeries. I asked for time. Felt rushed. Panicked when doctors said right now, thinking my time was up. Jeff said we can run it back. Let's run it back. So that is Todd Duffy's story. Unfortunately, he will not be joining us. And unfortunate as well is the fact that Luke Rockhold will not be joining us. Did not give me a reason,
but he canceled. It's been a long time that we've had two no-shows. I apologize for that. You know how much it kills me inside. It has been a great show. We appreciate Curtis Blaze for coming on short notice, and it does sound like we're going to have one more short notice guest before we say goodbye, and it sounds like we're going to be connected to Jeff Hughes, who is on the other end of that controversial eye poke. We'll get his take on what happened. In case you missed it, they were fighting. It looked like it was going well for Todd Duffy. Then there appeared to be an eye poke. Doctors came in. There was some discussion. First, the ref spoke to Duffy. Then the doctor came in. And then after some consultation, much like the Bader Congo fight, Duffy said he was seeing double. They stopped the fight, ruled it a no contest. And everyone seems to be very mad at Todd Duffy, claiming that he tried to find a way out, which is a bizarre one for me because he was doing well in the fight. As I mentioned in my column this morning, I think his body language is what is drawing some criticism, in the sense that he didn't complain, he didn't argue, he didn't throw a fit. He seemed somewhat content with the fight. He seemed disappointed, but he seemed like, all right, it is what it is. Like, he didn't seem to really try to convince them, like, no, I could go. And I think that's what people feel was a sign that he wanted out. Maybe I'm naive in these cases. I don't tend to feel like, you know, these fighters who are doing something pretty crazy, like stepping into a cage and fighting another grown man, I tend to feel like they're not cowards or cowardly or trying to find a way out. I tend to believe them in these cases. It looked like there was an eye poke there. Obviously, we don't know the severity. Jeff Botari, you're seeing some photos here. Jeff Botari, the great photographer for the UFC, on his Instagram, I don't know if we can grab that, posted a photo of Hughes's foot seemingly going directly into Todd's eye. But that wasn't the eye poke in question. And so an unfortunate turn of events. Do we have Jeff? Okay. So it sounds like we'll talk to Jeff here, get his side of the story very quickly, and then we'll say goodbye. By the way, speaking of heavyweights, how about Cain Velasquez? Had him in studio this past week, and what a second showing that was as far as his Lucha Libre career is concerned. Again, he competed for AAA, competed at the Hulu Theater right next door to Madison Square Garden. And I don't know if you saw the footage, or at least the highlights, but here he is once again doing these Hurricane Ranas and going off the top rope. I mean, it's unbelievable. I know last week he told me that the plan is to keep on fighting, but to be honest, the guy is a superstar. The guy is as agile as, you know, a cruiserweight, if you will. And cruiserweight in pro wrestling doesn't mean the same as it does in the world of fighting. Like a smaller guy, a guy who flies all over the place, is a very quick learner, has the resume, so we know he's a legit badass, not only in collegiate wrestling, but also in UFC, the real stuff, former heavyweight champion, beat up Brock Lesnar, all that stuff and more. And now he's flying around like this in the squared circle. This doesn't happen. Like, if I'm a promotion, whether it's AAA, whether it's AEW, whether it's WWE, anyone, I'm trying to sign this guy to a very, very long-term deal and trying to convince him to not do any more mixed martial arts ever again. He is a rare talent, and it's crazy because he's banged up. He told us that I think he doesn't have an LCL. Isn't that amazing? And the guy's like flying all over the place. It's truly an amazing thing, and we wish him the best. And it's not like I'm trying to get him out of MMA, but I'm just saying, why would you even do that if you're so good at this? Anyway, let's go to the phone line. I believe it's phone line, right? Is it phone line? Yep. All right. Let's say hello now to Jeff Hughes. Jeff, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for joining us on short notice. So a very unfortunate ending. I'm just curious, what's your take on what happened Saturday night? Fight's going on. He seems to be landing some big shots. Then the tide seemed to be turning a little bit. Did you, in fact, poke him in the eye based on what you remember?
I'm going to be 100% honest with you. I do not recall poking him in the eye. I didn't feel it. I didn't, you know, I'm not calling him a liar by any means. But yeah, I didn't feel the poke at all.
Do you think he looked for a way out? That's what he's being accused of. Did you feel like he was just trying to get out of the fight at that point?
Yeah, it felt that way. You know, I mean, the dude's a warrior. He was laying some big shots. He had me rock a few times. But yeah, I felt that the tide was turning and I was landing some big shots. I was busting them up and, you know, and then it was just kind of weird how it ended. I mean, people get poked in the eye all the time and fight on, and he just didn't want any part of it.
We're showing a photo now of another moment in the fight where it seemed like you kicked him in the face, but it seemed like maybe your toes went in his eye as well. Do you remember this moment, and did you feel like they went in his eye in that particular moment?
No, I didn't. I mean, but a high kick, you know, especially in the heat of battle, man, you don't feel any of that. So
sure.
I was going for my shin on his chin, but that didn't work out. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't, but I'm almost sure I did. I know I didn't feel it.
So when this is happening and the referee stops the fight and then the doctor comes in and you're in your corner just kind of playing it out, like, what are you seeing here based on his body language? Because I think he is being criticized because of his body language, because he didn't put up a fight, because he didn't try to convince the ref or doctor that he was good to go. What do you see? Are you seeing a guy who wants to keep fighting and just basically can, or are you seeing a guy who is trying to figure out a way how to stop fighting?
Yeah, to me, I thought the fight was going to continue. I thought he was trying to catch his win. You know, it was a pretty we were going at it for 4 minutes, and then when I saw the doctor coming, I knew it was over. I just was hoping it wasn't, but yeah, I didn't see him grab at his eye or blink or anything. So I don't know. I thought the fight was going to continue until I saw the doctor.
He did hit you with some big shots early on. How much trouble were you in? How much pain were you in?
To be honest with you, I wasn't hurt. I knew exactly where I was. The time he did drop me, I grabbed a single right away. I don't know if it was instinct, but I just knew where I was the whole time. And I knew that wasn't going to last. You know, there's no way you can keep that pace up for 3 rounds. And that was part of the game plan, is let him get tired. I've gone the distance. I'm not afraid to go 15, 25 minutes. So, and he's never has. So that was part of the game plan.
Did you feel like he was slowing down?
Yeah, absolutely. I got the turn on the cage and it was almost like he let me have it. I was like, oh. Okay, because he was very strong against the cage in the first time he put me against the cage and took me down. Very strong. I couldn't get my underhooks at all. I was kind of like stuck there. And that's a weird position because I'm usually pretty good off the cage. So he's very strong, but when I turned him, it was like he gave it to me.
And so how does a situation like this work for you? Do you only get your show money?
Yeah, as far as I know, it's only show money, which is kind of a bummer.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if you would have lost the fight, you know, you only get the show money. But in this case, because it's a no contest, do you feel like you should have gotten both?
I think they should. I'm hoping they go back and review it and maybe, you know, do it right. Give me half my money. I don't know. It's up to them, you know.
Yeah.
But, I it'd be nice. That extra win money is definitely, for me, because I've just gotten into the UFC, it's definitely a life-changing money for me right now. You know, it's a difference.
Do you think you'll get another? So far in the UFC, it's been a tough go. You had the fight against Maurice Greene, split decision. Now you get this. Do you think you'll get another chance?
I sure hope. Both my fights have been pretty entertaining for heavyweight fights, especially, you know, the one on Saturday. I thought, we went hard. And I landed some good shots and busted them up. And I think I did enough to prove that I belong. I hope they see it the same way.
Todd seems, based on the text he sent me, seems interested in a rematch. Are you interested in a rematch?
Yeah. I'll fight anybody. It doesn't matter to me. You know, we're at the highest level and I'm not here to handpick opponents or try to take easy fights. And he's definitely not an easy fight.
Right.
So, yeah.
Do you feel like the criticism he's receiving is unfair or warranted?
I think it's unfair. There's so many people that criticize, you know, every part of fighting and they've never stepped foot on a mat. It's like, go experience it first and then talk about it, because, and I'm not criticizing a guy for missing a free throw because I don't know how to play basketball.
Right.
You know, so to me, it's like, it's, I mean, I know it's part of the game, but like, you know, I'm happy people are on my side with it, but I feel bad for the guy. I really do.
So no bad blood between you and him, despite the fact that you think that he didn't actually get poked in the eye?
No. I don't. I respect him, and he comes out and fights hard, and you know, he's went through a whole bunch of injuries and all that. I respect all my opponents. I have no problems with any of them, and it's great that we get to do what we do.
Well, I'm sorry this happened, Jeff. It was a really fun fight, and you weathered the storm, and it seemed like the tide was turning in your direction all of a sudden when it seemed like you were on the potentially the cusp of being finished. So great job in terms of weathering that storm, and I'm sorry it ended this way. I think I speak for everyone, disappointed that it ended in that fashion, but maybe they run it back and you guys get to finish this one out. Thank you for coming on and explaining your side of the story, and hopefully you get that next fight sooner rather than later so it can make up for the fact that you only got your show money.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. There he is. Jeff Hughes joining us on super short notice. Thank you to Corporate Jake and Jordan, newcomer Jordan, for grabbing him on short notice. I think New York Rick actually flexed his muscles there. Really? Well done, New York Rick. The ghost of New York Rick passed, rising from the ashes. First, he comes out with the hot take that the Tesla self-driving is actually a good thing, which I still maintain is the most ludicrous thing I've ever seen or heard in my life. And then he gets us Jeff Hughes on very short notice. So all's well that ends well. We end up with 9 guests in the end, not the 9 that we suspected we would have. But, hey, a couple weeks ago I told you that I didn't think that everyone would show up. They all showed up. This week I thought everyone would show up, and they didn't show up. But guess what? The Buffalo Bills are 2-0, so all's well in my world. Oh, you can't hit my music when I say that. The Bills make me wanna da-na-na-na-na. Old friend of the program, Austin, gave me that ball that I just dropped. Former director of the MMA Hour. I wonder what he's doing these days. Anyway, congratulations to the Bills, and congratulations to Justin Gaethje. What a performance on Saturday. Will he get Conor McGregor next? We shall find out. That's the fight, in my opinion. What a build-up that would be. And Gaethje's on a roll. Again, he's a different guy. The reckless Gaethje is no more. It's now the calm, cool, and collected Gaethje who's going to take you out in the first round. He was taking you out in the first round earlier in his career, but now he's just a different kind of fighter. Credit to his coach, Trevor Whitman, for what they've done with Justin Gaethje. Well done. All right. Thank you very much, Tristan Connolly. What a story that is. Congratulations to him. Thank you very much, Ally Quinta. Good luck on October 5th. Thank you very much to Ben Askren. Great to talk to him, as always. Thank you very much to Dustin Poirier. Really appreciate his time. Thank you very much to the great Action Bronson. Great stuff, as always, from him. We're best buds now. Thank you very much, Kat Zingano, Jeremy Stevens, Jeff Hughes, Curtis Blades. All the best to Austin Hubbard. If you missed anything, check it out. YouTube, iTunes, Twitter, all those places and more. Back next week. Same time, place, till say peace. I'm out of here.